Super Nintendo, Atari Jaguar, some Saturn, 3DO, PlayStation, Praying to Tim Schafer, PC a la mode, ESPN Extreme Games, Cybermorph, Beyond the Beyond, Carnage Heart, Sega Frontier, Full Throttle, Fallout, all on the Infinite Lives Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Infinite Lives Podcast number 5. This is John Hood. I'm here with my buddy Dan, as usual. Dan.
Hey.
And we're again joined by our good friend Kevin.
Hey.
Last we left off, we were still in the realm of early, mid-90s PC gaming, as well as the Super Nintendo and the Sega Genesis during the great heyday of their time. So, I know we were going through our brief experiences with those. That's not so brief, because we talked about it for a couple hours already. but now we start moving into the PlayStation era, as well as the brief Sega CD periods. I wasn't much of a... I didn't have a PlayStation when I started out, when those came out. So, Dan, why don't you talk a little bit about your first PlayStation, when you got that?
Well, are we done with the Super Nintendo?
Do we want to talk more about the Super Nintendo?
I don't know. Is there any other games that we wanted to cover?
I can't think of anything else particularly. I mean, we did end on probably one of my favorite games, which was Earthbound, and you know, we've gone ad nauseum about Final Fantasy III. I mean, that's my favorite game on that system of all time, and pretty much my favorite Final Fantasy and RPG of all time. I can still go back to that game today and play it over and over.
I mean, if we added much more, we'd just be covering all the games that everyone knows. Super Metroid.
Yeah, I never played Super Metroid, so
I
thought that you were...
No,
you
I've never
played Super Metroid.
Never played Super Metroid. I've never played it all the way through. The copy I had at one point did not have a save that worked, so I was unable to actually save the game. So I never got around to playing it and finishing it. So it's probably one of my gaming shames, if we were to say something like that. It's a game I've never played that I've always wanted to play. Because I have played other Metroid games, some of the
All right, we're playing Super Metroid. We're shutting down the podcast.
we're done.
I've got it out there. We can just get right to it.
This podcast. Let's play Super Metroid. Super Metroid, I looked up some of the history about that series. Even before it became like Metroid Prime and it was developed by American developers.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the few games where it's developed in Japan, but it's sold more here in the U.S., like, Metroid wasn't very popular in Japan as much as it was popular here.
So it was one of the few series that did better here than it did over in Japan?
Yeah.
And yet, that's kind of surprising, you would think, because Japanese developers were most of the time developing for their audience, and we were pretty lucky if we got something that kind of hit with us and resonated with us.
Yeah, I mean, Samus is, like, a household name here with our generation of gamers, and even probably, you know, kids that are younger than we are, but like Metroid was, it had a following in Japan, but it was not as popular here.
Okay.
Well, it kind of tapped into what American audiences loved at the time. I mean, you had sci-fi, you had aliens, you had like the Metroids hugging your face. I mean, that's straight up sci-fi of the 80s and 90s.
Well, see, I played the first Metroid on the NES. I never owned a copy myself, but I did play it. And you know, we've been over this before with my gaming history. I wasn't ready at the time for that type of game that, you know, required a lot of investment of exploration that was more complicated. There were a lot of secret areas that were, you know, you had to backtrack a lot. You sometimes had to get a weapon that you had previously. I know the freeze beam being one of them, like that was something that you had to backtrack and get at one point to help you move forward in the game, and just I never got around to finishing that game. I would always use the cheat code and, you know, see Samus without her armor on and
Justin
then go fight
Bailey.
Justin Bailey.
And then go fight
the
Mother
Justin
Brain.
Bailey code.
Yeah.
Of course, that's what got me in Super Metroid. I couldn't play the original, or my mom actually had Metroid 2 on the Game Boy. I just couldn't play those because the password, with all backtracking, you could play for 2 hours, not get a new password. Then you'll play for, you know, 10 minutes and you need a new password that, you know, is, what, 20 characters, 25?
20 characters.
And that was the same thing. That was the same thing with Metal Gear on the NES. That was another reason I couldn't really get deep into that game, too, was because of the password system. Yeah, it was a lot of, it was a complex password, and you had capital and lowercase letters, and...
Or Castlevania 3 and Mega Man did good, just have a grid, punch things in.
Yeah, Castlevania 2, I think, had a letter-based password system.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just say this about the Metroid series, I didn't really play the Prime games, because I didn't really like that it went to a first-person shooter view, even though I like first-person shooters, but the Metroid series was kind of groundbreaking just because there was a lot of story and world building in that game, but there was not much dialogue or text. Like, I think Super Metroid had just that opening scene where it kind of, there was like some text, right? Or was it speech? There was some text. There was, like, very little story in the beginning.
There's a little text, yeah. Pretty much it recovered the original two games, and it had, like, a quick little flashback video that looked like it came from NES or even from Game Boy, which looks silly on Super Nintendo seeing this black and white video.
But, well, yeah, and then, like, then Ridley captured the, what is it, the last Metroid?
The baby Metroid.
The baby Metroid, and then went off to, I forget what their, what that planet was.
Phobos
to the pirate base in the space pirate base in Phobos, and that was about it. That was all the story you got, but there was a lot of story in that game without actual like dialogue or text or explanation.
Well, I'm sure if I go back and play it now, I'm still going to enjoy it because I do enjoy the Metroidvania style game that, you know, that has become.
Yeah.
Synonymous term when you see those types of games where it's a, you know, a fairly open world that you explore more and more of as you gather more and more power ups. So I'm sure if I go back and play it, I'll enjoy it.
Yeah,
that
game was holds up.
Yeah, that game was rad when you would get new powers when you got those. I forgot what they were called, like the sprint boost when you got that super sprint when you'd start like going so fast across the screen.
Or the fact that you could combine your weapons instead of the previous games where you had one or another. Now you can have the wavy ice shot, you can have the plasma shot with ice, you could combine all of them.
Okay, I'm convinced. I will go back and play this.
I actually played it a couple years ago, and, you know, it's holding up a lot better than, you know, Metroid Prime games.
Yeah, those Metroid Prime games, because there's too much focus on the actual graphics on that, and... You know, as you age, it doesn't. Those early 3D graphics don't hold up.
Well, and I remember when I played the first Metroid Prime, my inclination instead of actually exploring and looking around the world was scanning everything because you had to scan there are all these things you could scan, and it was just. I never got immersed in it because I was so worried about, oh, can I scan that? Oh, can I scan that? Oh, can I scan that?
And if I don't get a certain amount scanned, I don't get this bonus, I don't get to do this thing.
This is weird. And then, you know, you didn't have that, like, really sharp platforming that you would have on the 2D Metroids.
Any of the jumping puzzles were
just
horrible.
It's just kind of lame. Like, I mean, it was a cool idea because you thought, like, oh, well, you'd just be more immersed in the world because it'd be 3D, but it's just kind of lame.
First-person jumping, it's never worked as good as, you know, traditional platforming. Third-person, or even best, you know, side-scrolling.
Yeah. All right, so we'll put the kibosh on Super Nintendo Talk because we've talked at length.
Yeah, well, at least detailed Super Nintendo Talk. I mean, I'm sure it'll come up in our conversations in the future.
Yeah. Okay, so my first PlayStation, I actually had a first edition PlayStation.
The 1000 model, I think it was, wasn't it called?
Yeah, it was a September, well, I don't know what the actual model number was, because I was trying to look up on Wikipedia, like, what kind of model I would have had.
Oh, okay.
But I couldn't really figure it out, but I had a September 1995 model, which is, it came out in North America in September 1995.
So you had a launch model.
Yeah, I had a launch model. And I had three games with it. I had Ridge Racer. I had Air Combat, which became Ace Combat. Well, it was Ace Combat in Japan, but it was one of those where they just changed the name in the U.S. for whatever reason and didn't tell anybody.
It's like Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
Change up numbers, eventually we'll catch up.
And then I had ESPN Extreme Games, which was a terrible game that was like a Road Rash, except... with extreme sports vehicles. So there was a bicycle, there was a rollerblade guy, there was a street luge guy, And I want to say there was a skateboard guy.
Well, yeah, because I think this is like right around the time the X Games
started. So. It was Road Rash, but really lame. Without weapons and without motorcycles.
So it was a bad game.
Yeah.
It was just a bad game.
It was a bad game. It would take like 2 minutes or more to load like a race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I remember. I had the demo for it and it was all about stream load times.
Yeah, that was a stupid game. Air Combat was a cool game. That was a cool game. Like, I would never play it now, but it was just cool because it was full 3D and you had, like, a whole world that you would
dogfight
and do all that kind of stuff.
If you think about it, it was just an updated graphical version and a better playing version of Afterburner.
Yeah.
Because if you
play a little more simulation based, but yeah, you'd have like, you know, 50 missiles or whatever.
Yeah, tons of missiles, and you'd just be shooting down like tons of planes.
Crashed under the weight of its armor.
It was cool, and it had like real planes too.
Yes,
you had MiGs and stuff, and you had different planes you would change out.
Yeah,
and I think there was a 2-player mode. I don't remember if that was Air Combat 1 or Air Combat 2.
Now, was this a birthday present?
This is a birthday present.
Okay.
One of my older brothers wanted to sell. He actually bought it like on launch.
Oh wow!
And then my brothers were much older. So and then he wanted some money because I think he put too much money into it.
Okay.
And then my mom just bought it for me because it was September, and then September is my birthday month.
Yep.
And so yeah, I just got a PlayStation. Ridge Racer was the one that actually got the most play, just because it looked like the arcade. It had cool music. It had one track.
Yeah, that's right. I do remember that.
Different variations of the track. It was really easy to drift and all that kind of stuff. And the big thing with that, one of the things that they advertised with that game was that you could, after you loaded up the game the first time, like once you got to the title screen, you could actually switch out the disc with like another music disc.
Oh, so you could just play some
You could
music
play
while you're...
other music with okay. a CD. But this is like 95. You didn't have too many CDs.
No, CDs.
So I had like
still...
my mom's like Beatles CD in there. Like,
nice.
Like, yeah, playing like Hey Jude while I'm like playing Ridge Racer. And
that's
thinking
how
it was
you
so
race.
Red. That is how you race with Hey Jude.
Sure, of course.
But what was weird was that I don't think there was a way to pick what track you were listening to on that CD. So it just would just do whatever track it wanted. And it would always come up with a Hey Jude.
Okay.
Yeah, it was really stupid.
So always
yeah.
Hey Jude. Hey Jude all day, every day.
It was really stupid.
Maybe your driver really liked that song, and that's
yeah.
why they had to...
But I'll go back a little bit, though, because I actually first played the PlayStation in Hawaii, where I grew up. There is, in the main mall in Hawaii, in Ala Moana, there's this store that's mostly for, like... Like, it's an Asian store, and it's called Shirakiya. It's a huge department store, like six floors. And there was an electronics floor. And, like, months before, like, September 1995, they had a PlayStation hooked up to a big-screen TV with Battle Arena Toshinden.
That's the big name.
Yeah. And then they just anybody could go over it and play. And whenever we go to the mall, I tell my mom like, oh,
make a beeline
I'm gonna go to Shirakiya and just play PlayStation. And this just happened for like months. And then so I finally got the PlayStation. I never got Battle Arena Toshinden because I kind of played it a lot, and that game wasn't very deep.
And judging from where the series went, no one else did.
Well, the funny thing is that my first experience with the PlayStation was a friend in high school. His parents went with him to, I want to say it was Blockbuster still, and rented a PlayStation.
Oh, wow.
This is back when you could rent video game systems.
You had to put, like, a deposit
or
something.
You had to put a deposit down, yep. And
it came in, like, that black case.
Yep, so he rented a PlayStation, and it was Battle Arena Toshinden and Ridge Racer and Ace Combat, the three games that we rented. And we played a lot of Battle Arena Toshinden, and I thought that was amazing. I'm like, wow, it's 3D.
Looked great.
There's 3D, and like my guys can move around.
They look
in the
so
world.
Real. Those are like real people.
They're not flat on you know,
those
one
look
plane
like real
of existence.
People.
I mean, they don't throw fireballs like Ryu and Ken, but they're okay.
No, they fight for real.
I don't even remember any of the characters.
I have
that
no
stupid
idea.
Game.
You could hold a gun to my head, and I couldn't remember any
of those
characters.
I think
those
was a whip girl or something. I don't know.
No, I think you're getting into Soul Calibur there.
There was dude, other dude.
I do want to say, I want to backtrack a little bit. I hate to do this, but actually, before I got the PlayStation, before all that stuff happened in September, I was actually, my mom was asking if I wanted a new game system, right? And I was, you know, reading all EGM and GamePro and Game Informer. Was there any other magazines that was
big? I just remember GamePro and EGM being the big ones.
GamePro, yeah, anyway.
But I still had my Nintendo Power subscription.
Around the time that PlayStation was coming out, the Atari Jaguar was in development. Now, you know, it was built as, like, Atari's, they're coming back. It's a 64-bit system. PlayStation was only a 32-bit system. They had,
of course, it's 64 if you use math correctly.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it was like two 32-bit processors, I believe.
Just like the TurboGrafx-16 was a 16-bit system.
The only thing was that it was cartridge, so you weren't really sure if you wanted to actually get it. But I was actually 50-50.
You were really 50-50.
I was 50-50, and, you know, I was leaning towards the PlayStation, I want to say, but, I mean, because my brother offered to sell his PlayStation to my mom, that first month that it was released, that kind of made the decision
much easier
for me. It was just like, oh, okay, well, you know, we'll just get this,
the PlayStation.
Yeah, but I was this close. Like, I don't know if I actually got that Atari Jaguar, I don't know if I'd still be playing video games.
No, you probably wouldn't,
because that was a stupid
you would
system.
Have quit.
Or you would have switched over to PC games and just played those.
I can name like three Jaguar games.
Primal Rage.
Oh, well, okay, four Jaguar games.
Oh, three. That's the only one I got off the top of my head.
Cybermorph, the Doom 64, or whatever, the Atari Jaguar Doom, and Aliens vs. Predator.
Okay.
Which is famous because when you shot an alien in Aliens vs. Predator, their acid would go all over the floor, but it would never dissipate. And you could get it so that if you're in a big firefight, you'd have to walk through a whole hallway and you just get hurt all the time.
Now, quick check-in with Kevin, since he owns every system. Do you have a Jaguar?
I have one, and let me just say, I have a Jaguar, I have games for a Jaguar, I can only name three. Doom, Cybermorph, and Alien vs.
Hey, I brought in the fourth. You got Primal Rage.
Yeah, Primal Rage. Okay, fine.
Now, do you own all of those games?
I don't have Primal Rage, and I don't have the AVP.
Okay, so I'm going to ask this. Since you've gotten your Jaguar, how many actual times have you hooked it up and played it?
Almost none.
Almost?
I played Cybermorph when I first got it. And
yeah, because that was supposed to be the decent game.
Okay.
And it's horrible. You can't control it. You don't know where you're going. It's real bad polygonal, you know, flight. And you can't tell when you're hitting a mountain or when you're approaching it.
Oh, so this is a flight game?
So it's kind of a third-person, arcade-y flight, shoot down the aliens,
it's
or
just,
whatever.
Okay, let's just call it what it is. It's a bad game.
Anytime you hit something, this polygonal face shows up.
It was like a green face, right?
Yeah, and it yells at you.
So stupid.
And because you can't see where you're going, the game is just watching this face yell at you for hours on end until you finally quit.
Now, the controller for that, wasn't it the one with, like, the big...
So it had, like, a dial pad on it.
So, as somebody had an Intellivision, which had the dial pad on it, and the Jaguar...
Like, good old American console gaming logic.
Yep. Completely useless controller until you have, like, the one game out of 100 that uses it. Like, Intellivision had a couple games, used it really well. Jaguar had one game, Doom. You know, if you're playing Doom on computer, hit button one, you're on your fist.
Pistol,
hit number seven, BFG. On Super Nintendo, L and R shoulder buttons, change them around or whatever button did it. You could actually select the weapon you wanted on the Jaguar. And that's the highlight of the Jaguar.
Well, that's good.
That's
enough. Yeah. Okay. Well, the brief footnote in gaming history,
the Atari Jaguar. So, like, yeah, PlayStation saved my gaming life. That's pretty much it. It would have been.
But you had experience with the 32X and the Sega CD, didn't you, though?
Not the 32X. I had a friend who had the Sega CD. We played Sewer Shark for a whole day because. FMV video was really like, man, this is like in the future. And then after about like a couple hours, you're like, yeah, this is stupid. Sewer Shark was dumb. Like, you were shooting, you're like this, I guess, a maintenance man in these sewer tubes in the future, and you're flying around shooting rats.
The most dangerous job in the world?
That's the game.
Yeah, that's the game.
The game is shooting rats. That's dumb.
Yeah.
That's dumb. That's like, that's far beyond, like, bad games and Atari dumb.
And wasn't that system really expensive, too, the Sega CD?
it was really expensive. It had, until they had the top-loading flip-up one. Because they used to have a motorized thing that would come out. That was really expensive, and it would actually break. I had a couple friends in school that would actually, like, yeah, their Sega CD would break.
I bought one for $20 from a friend, and I bought it because it was broken. It's like, hey, if you could fix it, it's yours. Ended up selling it for $10 someone else.
There's a couple games on the Sega CD that stood out in my mind. The Lunar games.
The role-playing games. Were
yeah, the
amazing.
Japanese is Japanese RPG game. Just,
now, was
you
this
know,
at
good...
the? This is a couple years before PlayStation, or right around the same
this
time.
This was before.
Sega, yeah, it was before. Sega CD was like 93, 94.
Yeah, and this is where Working Designs came in.
Okay.
You know, they were a company that ported over games
from
Japan. And they brought over Lunar 2, Vey.
Oh, I've seen your RPG collection, Kevin. I know a great majority of those blue boxes are Working Designs games.
Yeah,
so.
I bought a Sega CD, which ends up Sega CD was same price as something else called an XI, which was a Sega CD and a Genesis
just...
in one from JVC.
Yeah, that
so
was a, that was a
that
weird
thing.
Time where you would have like these like the Philips CDI and,
Goldman.
That's
or,
all
we'll
mention.
I mean just these weird like systems. There was like even like
everyone owned patents.
You
together.
You ever remember that one console, the Pippin? That was made by, like,
yeah.
Apple.
Oh, it was the Apple, yeah.
Yeah, it was just a really strange time. Like,
yeah,
there was
like,
all these weird consoles.
Well, I mean, it's like, the whole idea of where PlayStation came from is Nintendo was going to work with Sony.
Yeah, we know the story.
Amiga 32 CD.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, with that boomerang controller. What's going on?
Yeah, back then you had, like, a bunch of different patents, different, like, consoles that no one would ever see.
Probably the other Sega CD game that I really liked was,
Pride Spider?
Yeah, Scottie Pippen's Jam City or whatever. Two.
Marky Mark.
There was, what is that, Silphied. That was kind of cool.
They re-released that on PS2, didn't they, at some point?
Something like
that's
that.
That's another one, that's one of my blue boxes.
Yeah, so you still have the original version.
Yep.
Like, okay.
That was a cool game. The graphics were really, really spectacular at the time.
Well, one day
we'll Snatcher. Snatcher's cool.
We've played a bit of that. We never got back to it, but
yeah,
we did go through and
Snatcher's
play quite
cool.
A bit of that.
Just because there's so much dialogue, voiceover dialogue is cool cyberpunk setting. The actual game mechanics are terrible.
Blade Runner the game.
It's pretty much the game. It's like a point and click adventure, really.
Except for the shooting portions, which did not work very well when we tried to play them.
And that's a game with like a million versions of it. Like in Japan, there's like PC Engine versions, MSX Engine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it's just, they had a lot of versions of the game, but...
So just,
cool game.
Just before the, and then after the Sega CD and the 32X, I don't know if any of us had this, I know I didn't, because I was still deeply entrenched in Nintendo's camp at this time. Did anybody own a Saturn? Either of you two? Or?
I didn't own it until well after a fact. I picked it up around 99.
Yeah, I picked mine, I didn't actually get one until just a few years ago. But I remember, I do have fond memories of some of the times in college when we'd actually get to play it.
I had a friend, the same friend who had this Sega CD, his older brother got the Sega Saturn. And, I mean, just like the Genesis, it was good in spite of itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it launched, what, like 3 months early with no games?
And no one knew it was launching.
Yeah, Sega didn't even tell the retailers that they were launching.
Hey, guess what?
Yeah, guess what? You should sell these. And, I mean, I think the first batch of games were pretty bad.
Yeah.
But they kind of... And then, you know, it was...
Well, isn't it generally known that the Saturn is probably a better 2D system than the PlayStation ever
was?
Yeah,
and you could get even, like, a RAM cart so you could play those Marvel versus Street Fighter games or Marvel versus Capcom games. You could play that fully with, like, the tag team system. Like, the PlayStation ones would have to actually load or something, if I remember.
Yeah, and, like, one of the big games early on for PlayStation, Castlevania Symphony of Night... You compare that to the version that's on Saturn, only came
they
out
made
in Japan.
Saturn version?
It was,
yeah,
yeah,
it had
a
two more
version.
Dungeons, like, more items. A lot better graphics.
Really? Yeah, it was apparently game. It was apparently a better game on the Saturn. Yeah.
Saturn did 2D.
I had fond memories of that system.
I think our best memories of that is when you finally you didn't actually own a Saturn at the time.
But I bought Guardian Heroes off of eBay.
Yeah, yeah.
I played Guardian Heroes back in the mid 90s, and Guardian Heroes, that is a cool game.
That is a great game.
Yeah,
obscure game. And, like, even now, you can find it, on the 360 arcade, I think.
It is, it's out on Xbox Live Arcade.
Yeah, they have, like, a remade version. That's Treasure. That's, the guys who made Gunstar Heroes, which is a great game that we forgot to mention on Genesis, but...
I only played it later on in emulator form, so, yeah, I do realize how good a game
that is. Yeah, I remember Treasure used to be, like, one of these top build suppliers, developers, kind of like Rare, and they're just gone.
Yeah, they disappeared.
Yeah, we hear about it in other stuff we listen to and read. A couple guys who worked at Treasure worked on this game. So, overall, I don't know of anything recently that they've done. So,
I mean, it's unlike we talked about HAL last week, and I mean HAL is still going strong.
Yep.
I mean Saturn had some good stuff going for it. It had that expansion slot on the top where you could put a RAM cart in there. Or you can also
expandable save memory.
You could get the Sega NetLink thing. I played like Saturn Bomberman online, like in tournaments and stuff.
That's
it's crazy.
Well, most people say that's the best version of Bomberman that there was.
Yeah, I mean, depends on whether or not you like the dinosaurs or not, but and all of the stuff on it. But I liked it, and you could get 10 person
that's,
Bomberman.
That's the thing, yeah.
That was crazy. You'd have a 13-inch screen, 10 person Bomberman. You'd go blind looking for your guy, but I mean,
and five of them would die within the first 10 seconds.
Yeah, but that was a good system for that. I think it was the Hexen version of on the Saturn that had this secret game inside of it. It was like a 2D pixel art game, and it was one of those I forgot what they're called, but those games where you'd have like a cannon on one side, and then the other player would have a cannon, and you guys would
tank games.
Yeah, like a tank game, and you'd you'd do the angle and shoot. Yeah. We wouldn't even play Hexen. We just played that
play
tank game. That was rad.
Better game, Hexen.
Yeah, especially on the Saturn.
That's pretty funny.
Okay. Saturn stuff, we'll just pop up.
Yeah, one last thing I have to say is the one thing it had going for me was working designs. You know, companies.
Yeah.
They stay loyal, and they were with Sega CD, so...
Oh, and the 3DO came out of this time, too, if I remember correctly.
We talked about the 3DO before.
Did we talk about it?
Yeah,
okay.
Did we?
No, I don't think we did, because you're the only one I know, Kevin, who owns a 3DO. So,
you still have... I'm that guy with all these rejects.
Well, I had another friend who had a 3DO, because he had an older brother who bought a 3DO when it came out. And... Man, there's like one good game on that system, right? Return Fire. That's like it.
Actually, Guardian Wars.
Okay, Guardian Wars.
It's a strategy game, kind of like Shining Force.
Now you have the one that's got the daisy chain controllers, right?
All of them were.
Yeah.
If you're playing a multiplayer game, B player one, easiest way win, just unplug the other guy's controller from your controller.
That was a weird one too. There were two versions, right? There was the Philips
CD or 3DO.
And Gold Star.
Panasonic and Gold Star. Panasonic and Gold Star.
And
those are strange.
And unlike, the XI, you didn't have, it's cheaper, get it this way. No, they're both $700.
Yeah, it's just, and it looked different, but it's just...
And then also, I know none of us had this. We played this in the arcade, though. Was the Neo Geo.
Well, yeah. I mean...
Well, that's every kid's dream.
I mean, I've never known anybody personally who actually had a Neo Geo.
I met somebody in college who, one of the guys I worked with when I was working at a...
He's a liar.
I saw it. I actually saw the system.
Shit up again.
No, I will attest to this. I've been to the man's house, and I had seen the Neo Geo system. It was hooked up to the television, and it actually worked. He pulled out one of the giant carts and put it in and showed me...
How big were those carts?
They were, at least...
Like a tablet size.
But thicker than the tablet, so it was because it's pretty much like an arcade board.
It was an arcade board. That's why they were
slim re-release PS1.
That's why they were so expensive, especially later in the system life. You'd have like these like 500 meg games in a cart form, and they'd just be like $300 for like King of Fighters 95.
This tempts me. I've actually thought about getting the Neo Geo X that's coming out, the gold.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got the 20 games loaded on it.
Yeah.
Because I never had a Neo Geo, and I'd get a portable one, and it comes with the base that looks like the old Neo Geo that it plugs into.
It seems too expensive for what it is, though.
I don't know, $200 seems like it might be a decent price.
Yeah, but like the built-in games, you're not sure, like...
I mean, no, I know what
like
games
the
are on there.
They're not like the later games.
Samurai Showdown 2, that's all I need, baby. That's all I need.
But you can just get any other version
of Samurai. Let me play Ukyo. No, it's not
you
on the Neo
well
Geo,
just,
though.
You might as well just get a real Neo Geo.
No.
Well, except those old games, some of them are going for like $500.
That's true.
It's just a thought I've had. I'm not saying I'm actually going to jump on it, but
it is $200, right?
Yeah, it's $200.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that. But
okay, enough trying to intervention.
So back in
Neo
Geo.
Okay,
so now let's dive into the PlayStation.
Okay,
because
PlayStation.
You had one.
I had one. The first games that I had after those three games, actually, I rented a really cool space shooter game. I was still into Shumps. Philosoma. I think that was developed by Sony, and it was kind of... The backgrounds and stuff were kind of like CG generated, and they had like a story and voice and everything like that. I looked at some video of it recently. It didn't look very, very appealing.
Didn't hold up.
Nah, it didn't hold up. But that was one of those games where it was on that like little demo disc that came with the PlayStation, and I was like, I gotta get this game. But so I rented that. But the first games that I actually did get, I got two games, Warhawk and Twisted Metal. Which were, like, I mean, they're both, I believe Sony developed also, and those were cool games. Warhawk is, I have so much fond memories of Warhawk. Warhawk was a 3D, like, future spaceship game. You had, like, this hovercraft kind of fighter plane that, you know, you'd have a full 3D environment, and you'd be going around, and you had different kind of weapons and stuff like that, and you had all this stuff going on, and it had a lot of like strange like mid-90s kind of video game humor. Every time you died, there was like a randomized like ending to the game, like so there'd be like a little text of like what happened when you died, so like, you know, like the aftermath of like what when Warhawk got destroyed, like the whole world would go to shit or something like that.
This sounds like a downer.
Yeah, well, one of them was really funny, where the main boss was it said the main boss was watching a video replay of your guys's of the Warhawk getting destroyed by his minions and stuff like that, and he was eating some chicken, and he laughed so hard he choked on a bone and died. And I remember thinking that I was like still in the middle of the game, trying to get through and dying a bunch of times. And I was like, did I win the game?
Yeah, that sounds like you won.
Yeah, did I beat the game? Should I stop playing?
So noble sacrifice.
Yeah.
You're dead.
But those graphics were pretty mind blowing for like, I mean, when I first saw them when I was 15 years old, they had you know, full 3D stuff. They had water effects, or it looked like water effects. I'm probably looking at it nostalgically, but
it was a giant place. It was a giant blue texture.
Yeah, but
polygon.
But like there was just like a huge. It was just a huge world. There were some worlds that were like more open, some worlds that were just kind of like straight shots. And I'm still sad to this day that they've never made a true sequel. Like, I know on PlayStation they made, like, that Warhawk multiplayer.
Yeah, they did the Warhawk.
Yeah, but they
I
never
have that.
Made,
That's not a bad game.
Yeah, but they never made, like, a true single-player, like, sequel, like a Warhawk 2.
And they probably never will since
I know,
the studio just got closed down.
I really loved Warhawk. It was so cheesy because it still had full-motion video.
Yeah.
So they had these guys who just looked like porn actors in these, like, really, like, low-rent sci-fi, like... Space Marine like kind of get-ups, and they would like go into their spaceship and type on their keyboard with their big massive Space Marine hands or something. It was really dumb, but like that game had a lot of fond memories. And then Twisted Metal, which I bought because EGM called it they listed it as their game of the year in 1995, and you know, I mean, there's not much to say about Twisted Metal. I mean, it was the first, like, car combat game. I mean, it just... Well, I guess it took, like, the Mario Kart formula...
Yeah.
And took out all of the races in...
It's the battle mode.
Yeah, and it just became battle mode, and you had all these different kind of cars, and it was kind of, like, a more mature feel, so... you know, some of the guys that you controlled were, like, serial killers, and they had, like, just a really twisted sense of humor.
The creepy clown.
The creepy clown, sweet tooth, and stuff like that. There was one multiplayer stage in that I believe it was in the suburbs, and there was, like, a huge, like freeway that ran around it, and it just felt crazy because it felt like it was like, I'm in the future, man. I'm like in a real city driving around like this suburbs and all these roads and stuff like that. Twisted Metal was cool.
That's good. No, I like I said, I didn't own a PlayStation right when it started out. Most of my PlayStation experiences came secondhand. So Kevin, did you get a PlayStation right when it came out?
So, right after it came out, one of my friends told me about how Final Fantasy, you know, the divorce happened. Square was leaving Nintendo, and we all kept wondering, where is Final Fantasy going? Because we needed it. We lived for it.
For whatever reason, Nintendo was making enemies of
everyone.
Like, the two big... I mean, yeah, you Sony... I mean, the reason why the PlayStation exists is because they just totally told Sony to F off. And then they told Square to F off when they were like, well, we're not going to do CDs at all.
And then if you look at it, I mean, digging into, like, CDI, and let's not go down that route, but
we're going
all of that happened because Nintendo, you know, they ended up getting those bad Zelda and Mario games because Nintendo said, hey, let's work together, Philips. And then they said, you know what? F off.
Yeah.
And Philips got to make crappy games out of Nintendo characters.
Strange time.
I still attest that those come from the darkest timeline. They did not actually come from our actual
alternate reality.
Yep.
The multiverse.
Where Zelda and Link, or Zelda and Mario had terrible games all throughout their course, and this was just still along that same path.
Yeah, I mean,
to think they actually fell on hard times, and Mario and Link had to, like, sell their services, get by.
Yeah.
They had to pay rent.
Like, imagine if that Nintendo-Sony thing never happened. Like that divorce where they were making the same, like, the app.
Oh, Nintendo goes to a CD system.
Well, I mean, if they didn't just tell them to, you know, just behind their backs and just said, like, no, we're not doing this, and just didn't really tell them about it, and, you know, they actually built that add-on CD thing, there'd be no PlayStation, there'd be no PlayStation 2, no
Sega
PlayStation 3.
Sega might be around still.
Who knows, yeah. I mean, it wouldn't have been a three-way contest for the CD 32-bit era.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's crazy to think about that. Like, Sony wasn't into making, you know, a lot of games or making a lot of, like, they weren't into making consoles. And
yeah.
They're a hardware company.
You know, PlayStation 1 and 2 are, like, I mean, I think 2 is the highest-selling, like, non-handheld console.
Ever.
Yeah.
And then PlayStation 1 is, I think, in the top 5, probably. And they sold, like, 100 million consoles.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
No,
and that all stemmed from that.
Yeah.
Like, if they... I mean, who knows? Maybe Sony eventually would have broken off and just done their own thing. But it would have been... It would have passed it on later. Maybe the PlayStation 2 would have been a PlayStation 1. I don't know.
You know, for all we think about Nintendo nowadays, they like to be a friendly company with good PR. Back then... lawsuits every other day.
It was at that higher up level, like the Miyamoto, like, developer level.
Yeah,
like those guys, like, everybody loved
good.
Those guys, but, like, that higher up, like, that old, like, stodgy managerial
mm-hmm.
thing was just crazy. But, yeah, let's just not talk about business too much.
No.
So,
well, I mean, the thing is that, like, at this time, I was still deeply entrenched in Nintendo's camp, so I didn't even... I was like, no, PlayStation's bad. This is okay, I guess, but my Super Nintendo's better.
You are not ready!
No, apparently I wasn't ready. I didn't
Yeah,
pay
so
attention
Dan,
to
you
me. Want to
explain that one?
You are not ready is the ad campaign for Sony PlayStation 1, and they had, like, a block of text, and I forgot everything that they said on there, but on the bottom it was just the letters U-R-N-O-T, and then there was a red E.
Oh, red E. Okay.
Yeah, you are not ready.
Oh, clever. Okay.
Yeah, it was not clever.
It was hip.
It was hip.
It's too hip for us.
It was when, you know, it was the same time when,
and to this
when
day,
John Romero said he was going to make you your bitch or what?
He was going to make me his bitch.
Yeah, you know, for Daikatana. Like,
hey, he did.
There was a lot of strange, like, video game advertisements
I'm
back then.
I'm
going to
say this. Sony still makes those weird, obscure ads that nobody
yeah,
really...
Yeah.
Does.
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of them are still kind of funny.
It used to be cute. Now it's not so cute.
Some of them are kind of funny.
You don't even know what they're about.
Yeah, most of them.
We'll get to that. We'll get
anyway.
There.
So, anyways, after a divorce happened, I learned that Final Fantasy VII, which, first, that confused me how it could be number 7, because we just got number 3.
Yes.
But it's coming PlayStation. At that day that I learned about it, I was begging my mom, take me down the mall, I'm buying a PlayStation. And I picked one up.
When did FF7 actually come out?
It's about...
97?
Was it 97?
I want to say 97.
That would have been 2 years after it actually, PlayStation actually came out.
Yeah, I want to say it's September 97.
Well, because remember, the Super Nintendo was still going strong at this point. Yeah. So, like, I still had my Donkey Kong Country and my Donkey Kong Country 2.
Yeah, I mean,
2,
we mentioned it when we talked about Super Mario RPG.
Yeah.
I mean, that game came out, like, 96, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, the year before.
So, yeah, 1997 in all countries.
Yeah. So, and, I mean, I don't want to get too deep into this. We'll you know, we can have this discussion later on when we're talking about, if we ever get into a serious discussion about, like, our favorite games and RPGs. But I'm still and was never a fan of 7, so...
This is not the time or place for that.
But, you know, everybody loved that game.
So when it came out, it was great. I mean, look, if you look back on it now, maybe it's not so good, but, like, it was cool when it was... I mean, it had awesome music.
Yeah, no,
I mean, some of...
The cutscenes were really good.
Yeah, I mean
those were mind-blowing back
then. The bad guy was cool. I mean, it was...
Music was really good.
Yeah, the music
was
really good.
Well, the CD quality music, yeah, that's
going from MIDI to having, like, full orchestras. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Materia system. I mean, it was okay. Some of the stuff was, like, dumb where you just... I mean, once you got Knights of the Round, you would just own everything.
Yeah, you broke the game.
I mean, you know, but, like, that's, like, you know, side stuff.
That's
but, like,
my new shit.
I think the story was really good.
Okay.
But, I mean, the story was on par with all the other stuff.
If you want good games... What I picked up with my PlayStation, I needed a game, and this was early on, so there wasn't any...
So a couple years in, so there's still...
No, this was not even a whole
year
in.
Oh, so this is, you got it before
right
when they announced
it.
Okay.
So it's early on, so I picked up that game that kept seeing it in EGM, amazing game for 3DO, and I can never get it because I didn't have one back then. I got Gex. The smart aleck gecko in a 2D platformer with Dana Gould doing the voice, which...
What?
You know, that's real good, because Dana Gould, no kid who would be a target for that video game knew who the hell he was.
Wait, Dana Gould did the voice of Gex the Gecko?
Yeah.
All Gex, right. If anybody doesn't know, is a dumb game.
From Crystal Dynamics.
It's Crystal Dynamics.
Kind of messed up everything.
It was 2D, like, platformer art. Action arcade kind of thing, and you're a gecko. Good job.
So I missed out on the PlayStation.
That was awesome.
Is what
you're
saying.
Yeah. No, because then came the second game I got, and this one, PlayStation did a great thing where you could start having the crazy games in the US. You could have the really crazy ones. So imagine how awesome this sounds. First person shooter, you're in a giant robot, that robot's a rabbit, and you shoot carrots. And you want to pick up carrots.
Jump and flash. That was.
And it's actually a lot of fun.
Wow.
The bad guy was Baron Aloha.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was the bad guy's name. And the main draw of that game was that, it was a full 3D world. You were like in a robot. It was like a robot rabbit.
You were a robot rabbit.
And then you could.
Sure.
You could jump. And then when you press the button again, you would jump higher. And then you could. I think, and then one more level after that. You get so high off of the map, and the reviews were saying, like, you know, you could get vertigo and, like, get dizzy and stuff. It was pretty cool.
The first-person controller, remember, keep in mind, we didn't have dual analogs back then. We didn't have single analog. They actually did a good job of controlling the speed of how slow your jump descends, and actually using, I think it's like the R1 button. You hold it, and you change your aim.
Yeah.
It actually controlled really smooth for being a stupid game idea.
Oh, that was okay. A very early one.
Back Jeez. When the games came in cardboard cases.
Oh, that's just... That was not a smart design choice on PlayStation's part, I don't think.
Yeah.
And they quickly got away from that, of course. So yeah, I mean, after the first wave of PlayStation games...
I liked Crazy Ivan. That was a cool game. It was like you were like a Russian. You were like in a Russian mech type thing. It was like a mech warrior type thing where you'd like shoot stuff, and I mean you were like a big giant robot, and you're Russian. It's called Crazy Ivan.
Okay,
it's a cool game.
Yeah. So, I mean, I as I said, I didn't really have a PlayStation at this time.
And I got NFL Game Day for Christmas. Okay. That was my break from Madden.
Oh, your break?
Yeah.
That was the, but you felt bad about it, or was
no,
it
I didn't feel game? Bad because Madden didn't upgrade for a while, and they didn't look very good, and NFL Game Day looked awesome.
Okay. And so, so when we're in the PlayStation era, this is during the time when I'm heavily into the PC gaming, because I can't afford to get a PlayStation or a Sega Saturn or anything like that. So I still have my Super Nintendo, and I still have a PC that can run some stuff. And this is, you know, when you thought your PC would last you for a decade at a time. But that definitely wasn't the case when you started seeing some of the games that kept coming out. So when we came to college, I still had a fairly crappy computer. Might have gotten upgraded to an Athlon. I remember that being a big thing, the AMD processors. And so when we get to college, this is when I start experiencing PlayStation games, aside from that brief time I had when my friend would rent one. So I start seeing PlayStation games. I remember seeing Tekken for the first time. That was a really cool game, I thought. Enjoyed watching people play that and trying to play that game. Although, I mean, I never really got to any sort of depth in that game. Button mashing was the best I could do with that. Even when I looked up moves, I would still be like, well, I'm just going to... Nope, he's not doing that. I'm going to do this instead.
Tekken 2 still the best version.
Tekken 2? Yeah. Bam. No, I think I will agree there because that had... that was the first one with Eddie, wasn't it? And also the cop, I forget his name.
Martial Law was from the first one.
I'm talking about the cop who had the different stances. I can't remember his name offhand, but he was my favorite character. Him and Eddie. Cause
we can't jump to college because that's like 3 years of PlayStation.
Well, I didn't play much PlayStation. Well, that's where I'm going here. What else? I'm asking you. What else did you play?
In the interim, you had like FF Tactics, Tekken 1, 2, 3.
I remember the game that haunted me for so long. Being a RPG fanatic, hearing about a game from Squaresoft that was too controversial to be released in US. And as soon as you hear, as a kid who's obsessed with Final Fantasy, hey, there's a Squaresoft game, it'll never come to US because it's too controversial. And hearing that on good old website, like the unofficial Squaresoft website. That's like old school, like before you even had like GameFAQs, they were there.
Okay.
Game was Xenosaga. Or Xenogears.
Okay.
Which...
When did that come out?
That did not come out until 98. Because we were in college when it came out. But following that for so long, just, you know...
So you were following this game when it was in Japan...
Did I was following it before it even got released in Japan.
Interesting.
Like, yeah, that was, Xenogears, when it was coming down the pipeline, like, you know, people were saying, like, this is going to be, like, the RPG to end all RPGs. Like, it was just, like, I mean, the story was going to be just so mature and epic.
Then it had to have an idea, like, hey, we'll have reincarnation in it. And all of a sudden, it's, ooh, that's getting kind of religiously, and, you know, Americans kind of don't want religion of any sort. Okay, it's banned.
Yeah, it took a while to come out over here.
I still have my... I played this game, and I still have a copy, original PlayStation copy of it.
I'm obsessed with the game.
Oh, I know.
I've beaten it over 10 times for people to know where I stand.
Well, I can tell you where I ended on that game. I only got to the tower the first time.
Oh, yeah. And worst part of the game, jumping puzzle in a 3D role-playing
game.
So
I got to the... I remember getting to the top of the tower and then having to make my way down. And I think I saved it in that one point and I lost my memory card. And so I can never go back to the game and play and finish it.
Memory cards.
The good old days.
I had like three by the time like I stopped playing the PlayStation.
15 blocks.
The best was buying like a Mad Catz that had a little LED display on it to tell you what page you were on. It's 15 memory cards in one.
And all of them broke.
And it's Mad Catz. Yeah. And back then, Mad Catz meant...
Poop.
Yeah, it's gone. Okay, I've got 15 pages of memory cards. Number 8 will save for up to a month at a time, and number 14 will save for good.
Nice.
And I spent 5 times normal price on it.
So, as I mean, we've gone through some of the games that I went through, that I was playing on the PC at this time, and the SNES, and you've started to talk about the beginning of the PlayStation. So can you remember anything specifically, like, before we get to, like, you know, our college years where we started?
I mean, you still had, like, you had the first two Resident Evil games. I mean, I got the first Resident Evil game, we were in, my family actually visited the mainland for, like, a family thing, and my dad actually bought me Resident Evil, also known Biohazard in Japan.
Gotcha.
And made by Capcom. And he bought me that while we were on vacation, and that became one of, like, the longest vacations ever, because we still had a week of vacation in California.
Oh, but you didn't have a PlayStation to play
on. I didn't have
on.
A PlayStation. I wasn't... It was
constantly,
like, bring
taunting
it.
You?
So I just had the box. I read that manual about, like, 1,500 times. Like, on the plane back, 6-hour flight from L.A., like, I just kept reading, like, Resident Evil, like, the game manual. And when I finally played it, it was freaking awesome.
Yeah?
Yeah, the full motion video, super cheesy, but just, like, the exploration and, like, the genuinely, like, scary, like, moment when, the first moment when the dog jumps out of the window, like, always scared everybody. Resident Evil 2, I was so hyped for that game. I was so hyped for that game when I finally got it, and that game is notable just because Capcom basically made Resident Evil 2 twice. They made almost a complete Resident Evil sequel.
I've heard about
and then
this,
they
yeah.
didn't like it, and they scrapped it, and they started over. And then it was like 2 CDs, you could play the 2 different characters, I forget. Chris Redfield and then the other chick.
Is it Jill Valentine?
No, it was Claire.
Claire?
No, fuck. I don't remember. No, it was Leon Kennedy and Claire Redfield. Yeah,
okay.
There you go. Anyway, but I was so hyped for that game, and when I finally got it, I played it so much, like, the first weekend. I remember even sleeping over at my friend's house and playing it. Like, that, like, the whole, like, Saturday night after playing it, like, mostly Friday, slept over a friend's house on Saturday night, played it, like, all night with, like, my friends, and just getting scared and all that stuff, and I beat it at the end of the night, like, 2 days into it, and I was pissed. I was, like, waiting, like 2 years for this game.
And you were angry that you beat it so quickly?
Yeah, I beat it so quickly, I was like, is that it? Oh, man, that was jacked up. But yeah, other PlayStation games, Tomb Raider was pretty cool.
See, that's big when it came out. I just couldn't get into it.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
it felt so clumsy.
The first one, definitely.
Yeah, it was clumsy. It was more like the sense of scale, because you could, like, some of those environments were so big. I mean, for that time, especially. Were just so big, and then the graphics would look good, like, something, like, her face was janky.
My first experience with Tomb Raider was number 2.
Yeah,
so
that was a much improved game.
Yeah, that's the
number
thing.
Number 1
like,
was a prototype.
I played the demo for number 1, and I would get frustrated because you would have to be, there would be such pinpoint precision on a character that didn't move with pinpoint precision.
Yeah.
So it's like, you have to get right in front of the door, in the right position, for her to be able to open it. But you can't really turn very well. And
no.
You had, like, a sidestep that you could do to try and get you in the right spot. And it was just, it was janky. That game was really janky.
You could do some really cool things with the combat in that game if you had, like, a good enough space to fight. Because she would do, like, these cool, because you would lock onto the guy,
yeah.
And you'd do these cool rolls.
The
and
side flip.
You
jump and flip.
Yeah, and you'd do,
flip.
Like, jump and
yeah.
stuff. Yeah, so
and she'd always be shooting.
Yeah. There was some cool stuff. I always hated in that game that, like, shooting a guy took, like, freaking, like, 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah, too.
Like,
it took 100 bullets to
yeah,
kill a
I just
tiger.
Pumped, like, yeah. Or like a T-Rex.
Well, just your regular guns.
That was the main set piece of the first one.
Yeah, I remember
the second level
about
when
this.
The T-Rex came out, and then you're like, oh my god! And you didn't know that was going to happen because, I mean, you know, the magazines probably did, you know, they weren't covering it as much as they do now.
No.
And there weren't, like, a million trailers of games.
Well, no, and there wasn't, you know, a real, there wasn't an internet to go to and figure out about all this information. You didn't have that information readily available. I mean, the internet was still very new to most of us. We were, you know, we had our...
You might have Usenet or Telenet.
Had some boards you could go on. I could go into an AOL chat room, maybe, and talk with somebody about it. Use my Netscape communicator to see if there was anything, you know, somewhere, a picture about it. Don't even think about video, because...
Oh, video would take you 5 days to download
it.
Oh, you know, one thing I remember is... So, you know, I bought a PlayStation because of Final Fantasy VII coming. So it's like role-playing games are coming. This is my bread and butter. So I had about 2 years from when I got the PlayStation to Final Fantasy VII. And I was starving for role-playing games. And it's amazing the crap they put out.
Oh, are you going to talk about...
First, Beyond the Beyond.
That was the first... That was the first PlayStation RPG.
Yeah. And,
oh, man. What a dumb name, too.
That game had so many problems. Like, if you take... It was random battles. So, you know, you walk and you may get a battle. On that one, you walk at the most 5 steps before a battle. And the battles took forever. There were secret hidden button combos pressed when you attack. So, kind of like the Gunblade on Final Fantasy VIII. You hit the trigger at the right time and it'll increase your attack. Except you don't know what button it is. They never tell you.
Okay.
So randomly you could do enough damage to actually have the battle progress. Rest of the time you're missing. You have one party member who's a slime most of the game and can't do anything. You have another party member who gets cursed halfway through game. And when he's cursed, every one out of every 10 hits or commands will actually go through.
Oh, okay.
So a game with just non-stop battles with no progress in the battles. You never win.
Awesome.
And then the next one, Dan knows what this is.
Oh, man. Do we...
I would rather
play Bubsy than this game.
What game is this?
Oh, and I played it 6 times.
What game is this?
Saga Frontier.
Oh, is it...
Squaresoft's... On Game Boy, you had, you know, Final Fantasy Legend. And Final Fantasy Legend 2 and 3, and those were actually Saga games.
Yes.
Which used, like, the Final Fantasy 2 level up system of, you're going to get stats, maybe, somehow. And when you use an item, if you use your sword has X number of uses before it's gone.
So this is like a Fire Emblem games.
First, talk about the structure of the game.
So the structure, you have one story going on, and you have 7 different main characters picked.
Okay.
In a sense, 8, because one of them's twins, and you could change which twin you are depending on one boss battle.
Okay.
So, you go through picking your characters, and you have the monster, who changes what monster he is based on when you kill a guy, do you eat him, and if so, if you're a slime and he's a slime, you're a better slime now, or if you're a dragon and you eat a firebird, you're now a red dragon. Then you have, like, there's the swordsman, the mage, the superhero who transforms, puts on a costume with the spandex get-up, and becomes a superhero.
Okay, we're losing our listeners, Kevin.
Okay,
so basically, the gist of it is you had lots of characters.
You had, like, 7 RPGs.
And it's 7 RPGs.
7 mediocre RPGs.
Same plot, same locations, same characters. I mean, you could pick up any of these 7 guys in your party.
Uh-huh.
And the whole point of the game is you have to beat it 7 times, this horrible, not even mediocre, just horrible role-playing game. You have to beat it 7 times to see what the real ending is.
Oh, man.
And you never
have. I got through 6 of them. Each one could take between 20 and 40 hours, and I was determined. I got through 6 of it, first video game I ever played where I actually thought, I really should just go outside and play. I should read a book. I should do homework.
That was a game that came out after FF7, right?
No, before.
Was it before?
I want to say it came out like a few months before.
Because I want to say that
or,
this...
No, it was after.
Now, was it Square or was it
this is Square.
Square.
Okay. Yeah. So this was a game where a lot of people, people in my circle of gaming friends, bought it on the strict thing because
Square.
You know, well, it was Square and yep. FF7 was cool. Mm-hmm. I like the other Final Fantasy games. I'm gonna buy this Saga Frontier. This is not a Game Boy release. This is a mainstream RPG.
This is on the PlayStation.
Pumped out by Square. And man, when you first played it, you're like, "Oh, this is like the C team," or they made this.
No, it'll get better. It'll get better.
Yeah, they made this in a weekend.
These are the guys who got told on the Final Fantasy VII team. They're like, "You know what? We've got this other project we're gonna have you work on.
We need you."
The fresh guys, the guys fresh out of college, who they need just to cut their teeth on the programming.
Like I remember the graphics even just being bad, which is dumb because
although it was the weird blend of they did like hand drawn backgrounds, which actually looked pretty good with these polygon characters that just looked like somebody didn't know how to use computer art program.
Well, that's the thing I think that bothers me about a lot of the remakes that come out now is you see you had these old games that had these really cool looking sprites, and they update them, and Square's done this. Square's notorious for doing this with the Final Fantasy II remake that they did on the DS, where they turned them all into 3D polygons.
I tried
playing that game a little bit, and I'm like, I don't like this.
Yeah, there's just something lost in the charm.
Yeah, sometimes simplicity is what you need. Just keep it pure. Keep it good.
So Saga Frontier was terrible.
Saga Frontier was terrible.
And it came out in the U.S. a few months.
Because I remember...
About half a year after Final Fantasy VII.
I remember friends
VII.
Explicitly buying that game because it was Square.
So you guys went through Final Fantasy VII and you're like, man, this game is fantastic. It's another Square game.
I'm in. Oh, man.
Are you ready?
Yeah, and you spent. You are not ready.
You are not.
And you spent what, like $60 on that game, or what was
50.
It?
50.
No, those are 49 PlayStation games for 50. I had an advantage with PlayStation games because
of course you did.
I went back to when I go back to the Philippines the first time after I had my PlayStation, brought my PlayStation, gave it to a guy
air quotes
in an electronic shop in a mall in the Philippines, and he opened up my PlayStation and put a mod chip and soldered it on, and I could buy three games for 100 pesos, which the exchange rate back then, that was about $4.
Yeah.
So I would come back with all of these games. I had
CD burning technology.
I had crazy ass games. I had games that I would not actually buy normally, but I eventually did like. I got Blood Omen: Legacy of Kain.
Yeah.
That was a cool game.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
It kind of fell apart when they go, oh yeah, here's all these weapons, armors, and okay, that's it. Yeah. You have three different armors you get early on, and
you can suck people's blood from across the room. It's just really strange.
You saw prisoners on a wall.
Yeah.
It is torture porn.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
so this is still in high school that you're doing this?
This is still in high school. Like, I had a bunch of games.
This is Crystal Dynamics also.
Was that Crystal Dynamics?
They made the first Tomb Raider. They were part of the Tomb Raider games.
So they didn't
just make that. Was before Eidos?
Yeah. Well, Eidos published it.
Oh.
Crystal Dynamics made those games, if I am not mistaken.
Wow, they used to be one of the biggest.
They were a
around.
Good developer. Yeah, that's why when you're commenting about Gex, I was like, what are you, crazy? They made Tomb Raider.
Well, Gex is dumb.
Gex,
you had to be, like, European to like that game. That was when, like, Europeans didn't make good games at all. That's racist.
It's just wrong.
Look, I play so many European developed games now.
Dude,
like they make so much.
Daisy.
Yeah, I mean, dude.
Battlefield.
We're still working our way through high school
games,
and playing PlayStation.
There was a really cool game on PlayStation. It was very very obscure. It was called Carnage Heart. It was a robot fighting game. Except you didn't actually control the robot. You had to make a program for your robot using like these icons and programming like symbols and stuff like that. You had to make a program for the robot before he went into the arena to fight the other robot. So you had to tell him like, you know, how he was going to react if he was like in front of an enemy, what kind of weapons he would use, all these kind of like if then kind of statements. That was a crazy game, and like
that doesn't sound like a game, that sounds like homework.
Well, I mean, yeah, but you'd also, like, get upgrades, you'd get new programming sets, so you could, like, do different kinds of actions, upgrade, like, your upgrade your mechs and all that stuff. It was cool.
Okay.
It was really cool.
I'll take your word for it. That
I was not good at it at all. I had one friend who was super obsessed at it, and he would talk to everybody and explain, like, all of his new programming routines and stuff like that, and we just wash over. I wanted to mention it because it's one of those, like, you know, very obscure, like, PlayStation games that, because they just released so many games that a lot of them just that just kind of fell by the wayside, and a lot of people, I mean, don't know about the game. Another one that I actually never personally played, but was, I mean, very well regarded, was the Colony War games. Those are, like, space shooting, like,
some people, I've heard of them, I've never played them, so.
Those were pretty awesome games.
Still working our way through the early days of the first few years of the PlayStation here. Kevin, anything else? You were all RPGs for the most part, or did you play anything action-y, adventure-y that you remember specifically?
I don't need to get into it, Aim, but I had, you know, like Dan mentioned, Demo Disc. And, you know, that's how you had a lot of your games early on.
Well, yeah, PlayStation, the magazines would release those demo discs that would have, you know, the first level
like
or something.
Yeah, like PlayStation
on it.
Underground. And
yep.
I had one of them. It had a game. Saw it. Amazing. I don't need to say anything. Castlevania Symphony of Night.
Well,
when did that come out?
Like, 97.
Oh, was it 97?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was playing that in high school.
That's the crazy thing that I came to this so late and, like, never got a chance to play that when it first came out.
And demo disc, it wasn't a playable demo. It wasn't an English video. It was a Japanese video of, like, the beta test of it, the beta build.
Okay.
So it looked kind of janky, but here you have, like, you know, that cool ghost effect of Alucard running around, and he hits a guy, it says level up, he's using magic. I mean...
And so you bought,
okay.
Did you get that game right when it came out?
Oh, I had that day one.
Nice.
I'm going to say something. That game started one of the annoying things in games, though, where they're like, here's all the powers in the beginning, and you're super awesome, and look how cool this is, and 20 minutes into the game, we're going to strip you of all your powers, and you're going to start from scratch one.
But the crazy part
it's a good game. I'm not saying it's not a good game.
And that's bad. It could be even worse. It could be like some of those later Metroid games where it's like, you have your powers, but until we give you permission, you cannot use them.
No, let's not talk about another M.
What is a man?
No, so...
It's a puny pile of
secrets.
Secrets! Oh, God.
Have at you!
No. So, the crazy thing about Castlevania is, they made you seem like a badass in the beginning. They take away those powers. But by the end of the game, you're even more badass than you were at the start of that game. So, like, you had, like, when you got all your stuff that was, like, the initial equipment in the game, you're like, oh, man, I'm here. I must be really close to the end of the game. I'm at the level I was when I started. And then you find out about the second castle. And you're like, wait a minute. There's more equipment, and I get even better.
And then you start seeing, like, wait, I don't need a sword. I could pick up a staff, or if you want to break the game, I could have the shield rod.
Shield rod and the shield.
Alucard
shield, yep.
And just run into everyone.
The I win mode. When you need XP, you just run through that one hallway with the giant crazy knights, and you just pop out the shield.
And then if they drop something, it's ninja garb, god garb, which is best armor in the game. Super low drop rate, but who cares? Just keep running through them.
So why? I didn't even realize that it came out in 97, so since I played it later on.
I like that the beginning of that game was the end of, like, one of the
Dracula X or Rondo of Blood, I can't remember.
Yeah,
Dracula X.
Yeah, because you're Richter Belmont. But you still went up that same stairs, like, it's always that same stairs in Castlevania 1... I think 3 and 4. You went up that stairs.
Symphony
into,
and Knights go
That was cool, just because of, like, it harkens back to the old.
And you have that same boss music or that final level music leading up those stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Same
mm-hmm.
layout every time. There's always a boomerang in there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tremendous game.
I liked how they're smart enough. Hey, we're going to have you fight the final boss from previous game. If you beat him without dying, then you get bonuses. If you beat him after you die and you get raised back up, you'll get a lesser start.
By Maria, right? That's the girl who saves you. The only reason I know so much about the Castlevania, like, mythos and those characters now is because I went back and I played the Symphony of the Night, but I've actually I have the HD multiplayer game that they did on the Xbox Live Arcade and PlayStation.
You can play that multiplayer?
It's not Symphony of the Night. What it is it's a multiplayer-focused game that has... You can play up to six players, and it's basically like a raid run. So you're running to try and get to the boss, and you have, like, it's like a... It's a puzzle-type game, so you still have to make your way through these Castlevania-style levels. There's loot drops, so your character gets equipment, just like Symphony of the Night. It's got all the characters from there, so Alucard's in there, Richter's in there, Maria's in there, there's, like, Jonathan. Some of the guys from the DS games are in there.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really good. I highly suggest, if you've never played it, to try it out on the Xbox or the PlayStation now that it's on. And there was a ton of DLC for it. I bought the game, and then I bought all the DLC, so I have everything for that game. I pretty much paid a full retail copy of the game for a 2D sprite-based game that's only 10 levels.
Man, there's nothing wrong with 2D sprite-based.
No.
I mean, man, I'd give anything for another Metroid that's 2D right now.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, so at this point...
A couple other games that I remember importing from the Philippines, buying pirated copies.
The Wild West.
There was this crazy game called Battle Stations. It was basically like a naval fighting game. So you would have like a map, like a strategic map, and you would move your ships in position to like intercept like enemy ships. And when two ships would get together, there would it would load up like a fighting thing. So there would be like big ocean map, and you would actually control the ship, like where it would move and all those kind of things, and it was one-on-one with the other ship, and the different ships had special moves. Like, if you were a carrier, you would press like one button and it would launch all, like, all your fighters, and like, submarines would shoot missiles and stuff like that. I've never seen it in the U.S. and it was just a crazy ass game.
Reminds me of the Advance Wars games, similar to that's
Yeah, but no, but you controlled the ship when you fought.
Okay.
Like, you actively controlled, so it was two players. It was like a fighting game. Different, if you had a carrier, you would have different kind of capabilities than, like, a battleship. So battleships would want to try to get up close and use all of their guns on there, and the aircraft carrier tried to steer away and using your aircraft things. So, yeah, there was a strategic thing, but it would zoom in, like, and load up a level, and it was just those two ships fighting one versus one, and you would control one, and, well, if you wanted to play two players, the other guy would control the ship, and you would actually move it. It was so weird. It's like a naval fighting game.
Alright.
Like, it didn't make any sense, but it was Japanese.
But you really wanted to play this game.
I saw it in the store, and I was like, I want to play a game where boats fought each other.
Okay.
Like, that would be cool.
I think you're forgetting something. I know there's a game that you talk about quite a bit when you're talking about PlayStation. Did this come out, or I don't know if it came when it came out, but Einhander.
Einhander was, it was a Squaresoft made shump, and that was a pretty awesome game and really hard.
Yeah,
the graphics were good. That game moved so well, like it was just really, really smooth.
Did you ever beat it?
I want to say yes, but I'm not sure.
That game was hard.
That might be something we'll have to find again.
Yeah, that game was hard. I remember looking at videos of that like a couple months ago and just going like, I didn't even remember that this game was this crazy. But yeah, it had awesome music.
You know what Square game I thought was crazy? Mm-hmm. Samurai Showdown. The game where the whole plot...
Samurai Showdown?
Or, no.
Bushido Blade.
Bushido Blade.
That's what I was just about to talk about. I also imported Bushido Blade 1 and 2.
Game, it made no sense, because if you kill your opponent, then the game kind of ends.
Yeah.
But you have to, like, go the correct room, kill him in the correct way, with honor. You can't stab him in the back or anything like that.
Oh, there was no honor in two-player mode.
Yeah, in two-player, only honor was, I'm going to cut off your arms, then your legs... And then I'm going to stab you.
No, the only honor was, I'm going to pick the hammer, and I'm going to keep pressing triangle until you die. Because you would just hammer, and stun the guy, and make him backtrack, and you just hammer, and eventually I would hit your head, and you'd fall over.
I do remember Bushido Blade being the one where, you had the bullshit one-hit kills, where you're like, alright, we're going to collide, and I'm dead.
That was an awesome idea. I'm surprised that nobody's tried something like that again.
Yeah.
Or have they? I don't know.
I can't remember.
I don't think so.
It was cool when you would be in the bamboo forest and
yep.
you'd like slice the bamboo and they would
that became
like a thing. You just like slice the bamboo.
It was a samurai movie.
It was like another game that I imported was the two Tobol games.
Tobol number one,
which wasn't that good, but it was pretty cool.
It's a prototype.
Tobol number two was the game. Unfortunately, I only had the Japanese version because I don't think that ever came out.
Yeah.
So I had the Japanese version, and the adventure mode was, I mean, I don't know what was going on.
Dude, like, number one had a lot of dialogue.
Was it similar
to
your Dragon Ball Z experiences where it was there's text here, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it was like, I mean, there was like a full-fledged RPG, and the fights were handled like a Street Fighter-ish kind of like fighting system.
Like a 3D fighter.
Yeah, that's 3D fighter. But like the fighting was really cool. Like that was, I mean, it was pretty smooth. And the graphics were pretty good. Well, number two, number one was not too good.
It was kind of
didn't
good
that come
for
out?
The time, but back then you still had, like, the original Battle Arena.
I
want to
say Tobol number 1 had a demo of Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah,
in
and that's
it.
Why everyone
that's
bought,
why
that's
everyone
why
bought
I
it.
Bought it.
It was, like, a 15-minute demo where you were in...
sell a $50 game for a free demo.
Yeah, yeah.
Similar to our many experiences, the... I don't know about you, but I know the only reason I went and saw the Wing Commander movie was...
That's the only reason why anybody saw the Wing Commander movie, except for Freddie Prinze Jr.'s mom.
Yeah, and his dad, maybe. Oh, no, wait, his dad's dead.
Okay, once again, I apologize for my co-podcasters.
Europeans don't make good games in the mid-90s.
So we're still...
Okay, so we're burning it out.
Okay, and then I'd be remiss of not just talking about my Gran Turismo obsession.
Oh yeah!
The first time I played that, my friend had a Japanese version on his modded PlayStation, and that was before it came out in the U.S. And we played that for hours.
That's
like just
the first
hours.
Game that used the DualShock analog.
Yeah,
that brought in a new era of everything.
Oh man! And what would you? And then it was cool because when you had you'd have your car saved on your memory card, and you could go to your friend's place and plug in your memory card and race your cars against his cars.
Yeah.
Or you could, if you only had one memory card and you had multiple cars on your card and you wanted your friend to use one of your cars, you just take it out after it load your car
and then put it in the other,
and then he would load the other car. But I mean, Gran Turismo. I mean,
you couldn't just load it off the same.
No.
Why does that make sense?
Because there's two memory card slots.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
know.
Okay.
If they
okay.
check your achievements online. Oh, no.
okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, don't really have to talk about Gran Turismo that much. I mean, just because it was the first realistic, car racing game.
It wasn't Ridge Racer. It was.
Yeah, you had real cars. I mean, like, you know.
Yeah,
like
and real tracks.
Real tracks. Some of them were real tracks.
Laguna Seca was
Laguna
Seca.
I always liked Trial Mountain. Was it Trial Mountain?
Yeah,
Trial Mountain. Like
some
I always like
straightaway.
I liked that one. That wasn't a real one, but yeah. I mean, and then you had the licenses. Like it was hardcore.
Those licenses,
they were
BS.
It was hardcore. The second one came on two CDs. It had like a billion like Nissan Skylines. But
yeah, Dan.
Yeah.
Did you have a legitimate copy of Gran Turismo 2?
Not two. I had one. I had the real copy of one, not a legitimate copy of
I know,
two.
Because I remember you coming back from the Philippines with that.
Yeah.
As well as Tenchu, Stealth Assassins.
Oh, that was an awesome game!
And
you did not pick up that horrible Chrono Cross for me.
Oh, yeah.
I did not play it.
I remember coming back on that trip, because I would also bring my PlayStation.
Yep.
Like, so I could play with like my cousins. Some of my cousins didn't have PlayStation. So I would bring, and also like on downtime and stuff, like, you know, when you're just at home, like, you know, in another country. Anyway.
Not doing anything.
Yeah, so I would bring my PlayStation in my backpack with all of the wires and the games and stuff like that.
Do that nowadays, TSA.
I know. So I would always get kind of scared because I'd have like something like 20 games or something.
In the janky plastic CD cases.
Yeah.
They're not even real CD cases.
They're not real CD cases. The weird thing was, in the Philippines, for whatever reason, like, there were actual brands of pirates.
Like, I remember... Players. Yeah, players. Like, you would have the same game, pirated, but one would have a logo that said players on it, and I think a basketball or something. And then another logo of, like, I forget what the other ones was. And I was like, are these brands of pirates, like, pirating this game? I don't understand. Why would you stamp your... I don't know. Well, it was Wild West.
US. That way you know it's... quality
pirates. Yeah, that should, yeah, I saw the players, I was like, I'm gonna get the players, because I trust players.
Now, is it more expensive for the players?
No, it was all the same, okay. Like, I don't remember, I would love to know, like, the story behind that. It always kind of perplexed me, but yeah, I would be going through the airport and just going like, oh, please, please don't look at my bag and all of these pirated games, like, I'm totally gonna get caught. I never got caught for that. One time I got stopped, though, going back to the U.S., and, I was putting my bag through security, my backpack, and I had my PlayStation and all the wires, right? And everything, right? So, you know, like, I go through the metal detector, I'm waiting for my bag to go through, and I can see the security guy's face who's looking at the x-ray, and his face just, like, almost goes white, right? And then he's like, what is this? And then they turn the monitor a little bit to me, and it's like, can you explain what this is? And, like, when I looked at it, I was it's like, just a that, looks like that looks like a bomb.
Yeah.
Like, it was like this black like, rectangle thing with, like, because the PlayStation was kind of had that circle thing in the middle for the plate, right? So it kind of looked circular, right? And then there was all these wires all over the place.
You just wrap up your wires.
I just shoved it into my thing. I was, like, 6, 17 or whatever. Oh, anyway, man. And I was just like, oh god. And I was like, no, that's just a PlayStation. So they took it out, they looked at everything, and they're like, oh yeah, I guess it's just a PlayStation. But yeah, it looked like a bomb. It was crazy.
And did you have 20 pirated games at that
I had
point
20
too,
pirated games, but those guys didn't care.
No, they didn't know what that was.
Yeah, I mean, my story was always gonna be like, I bought it at a mall in a store. Like, I didn't buy it. Like, yeah,
it's
this
real, is, isn't it?
Like, yeah, the sad thing about, on a little tangent, the sad thing about games in the Philippines now is that there's not too many pirated games now, because, like, the PlayStation 3 and Xbox is not
the copy protection is much harder.
Yeah,
now.
It's much harder, and it's not really that beneficial anymore, and people would rather buy, like, the real games. And most of them are imported from the U.S.
Yeah.
Or Europe, and I was really sad when I went there, like, you know, like, a
wanting
couple years ago.
Yeah,
stuff. I was like, oh, I want to know what the scene is, and I'm just like, man, that PlayStation era was, like, the best. You had all these kooky games and players.
I remember when you came back from one of your trips and you had a couple of PC games that you had gotten from there. It didn't work.
I got,
Call of Duty, one of the Call of Duty games.
Yeah. And that one was funny because they only gave me... It was 2 discs to install, and they only gave me the second disc.
Yeah.
Oh, the play disc?
Yeah, both times, so I couldn't actually install
it. Even though they were both labeled. One was labeled install, one was
labeled play.
And I
got, like, I think one of the
Dawn of Wars. Yep.
I also got, I think, SimCity 3000, which was crazy because there was a crack on the CD, so there was actual instructions on the CD to do that. Yeah. Freaking crazy.
So we're at this is an interesting point in the PlayStation, because this is when you guys come to college, and we all meet in college here, obviously.
Oh, one thing I think I should add, because it's a little harsh on something. Okay, I mentioned, like, Beyond the Beyond and Saga Frontier, and how until Final Fantasy VII came out, all the role-playing games were crap. And I do have to say Wild Arms.
Suikoden, yeah.
Those two games, they were the two that, you know, were good early on. And then they turned crap after Final Fantasy VII and VIII came along.
Was the Breath of Fire games any good?
They only made one on there, and that was 3, if I remember correctly.
I think they made 4.
Yeah, they did 3 and 4. Okay. And they were okay.
Yeah, those
3,
are,
I remember
those
being told it was
played.
Like a dungeon crawler. Like it
no, that's 5.
Is that 5? Okay.
Yeah, Dragon Quarter.
Okay.
But Wild Arms was great. You had a great sort of combat idea, real good world setting. You had the Wild West, but you also had, like, ancient technology. So there's robots.
I only remember playing that briefly, and I never got deep enough into it to appreciate
it.
So.
It's hard to get back to it because it's really slow. It's, you know, a real slow, not like slow pace, but walking is slow.
Yeah.
And then Suikoden was amazing, you know. Real cool idea of let's have 108 recruitable characters in a role-playing game. Let's have it where they could die permanently, either according to the story where you mess up, or they could die because you sent them out in a battle and they got captured and executed.
What was the Squaresoft game that was that like turn-based dungeon crawler where it was just you were one guy and it was like an isometric thing?
Oh, Vanguard.
Vanguard?
Or Vagrant.
Vagrant Story.
Vagrant
Although
Story.
Although
that wasn't turn-based. That was,
wasn't turn-based?
No, it wasn't turn-based. That was action-paced.
That was action-paced?
Yeah. Although there's Parasite Eve also before that.
Yeah.
Although I think that's getting closer to college.
That was an interesting game. The
Parasite Eve?
Yeah, from seeing that. I remember it, like,
yeah,
if I remember watching it, the combat, you could move around freely.
Yeah.
And but you still had your actions that you could do against the enemies, and it was based on positioning. So like you'd be far away from an enemy and you could shoot them, but you didn't want some enemies you didn't want to get too close to you because they would mess you up.
And some of them were ranged guys, so you want close distance so they feel pressured right away.
It was like a Resident Evil with a splash of like tactical
RPG.
Yeah, RPG.
And like with Resident Evil, bullets are rare. Okay.
Yeah, a game series I always wanted to play, but I never actually got it was the Ark the Lad games.
I got them when Working Designs released them as a trilogy.
Yeah.
And so they came out is way too expensive to pick up because it's three games in one with Working Design packaging. They sold it for like $100 new.
That was late. That came out in 2000.
That's after PS2 came out.
Yeah, because I remember selling that at the electronics store that I worked at.
Yeah, and so I had, by then, I already had the PS2 Ark the Lad game. First experience with it is a lot of fun. So then I picked up the trilogy. The first one felt like a prototype. It was missing features, really janky, huge graphics. I mean, you only fit instead of like a big grid like Shining Force where it's like, 15 by 15 squares on the screen, you'd have like, I think, 8 by 8.
So this was the combat was turn-based strategy?
It's all like Shining Force,
okay.
You know, tactical RPG with grid-based movement, turn-based.
Mm-hmm.
Number two was okay, but it continued the story of one so strongly that if you couldn't get through one, you couldn't do two.
Okay.
And then three did the same thing, following two strongly, but then putting changes in that made the game not fun.
Okay.
Quick game that I also wanted to
another game
mention. Yeah, another game.
Okay.
It's a games podcast.
I got you. Talk about it.
I don't know enough with games.
It's an obscure game. It's called Turnabout. I bought it, I imported it, and it was like a racing game, but it was like a race against time, and you had different kinds of vehicles, and you had like this huge like city to drive through, and I just remember playing that just like a ton. That was a cool game because you might be like in a bus one level or like a sports car, and there was like all these different like ways to go and everything like that.
So it had multiple paths.
It was
a racing game.
No, well, it was like a race against time kind of thing. You needed to get to a certain point, like before like the level ended, or else I don't remember.
You don't remember the specifics.
I just remember playing it and having like a ton of fun, like with like a whole bunch of people.
Now, was this in high school still?
Yeah, this is in high school. Like, I bought it in the Philippines. Yeah, and just, like, it was one of those games where, like, I just remember, like, long nights just playing it with friends and just having a whole lot of fun. Like, Twisted Metal 2 was the one that, like, we would go to other people's houses and just play that. Because they actually had a co-op mode, unlike Twisted Metal 1. And you would just play that, and that was pretty rad. Why don't we take a quick like 10-minute break and we'll just come back with part two of this.
Sure.
Infinite Light Podcast Intermission.
All right. Well, after that break, we're back with Infinite Light Podcast. This is part two of our big episode number 5. We were talking about the PlayStation and all of these great games that were coming out, and we just wanted to touch on two other things on the PlayStation.
Yeah, one thing I want to talk about is Dan was mentioning about the original
PlayStation
1000 series or whatever it is, and the one thing that's really cool about that is considered even to now being like the primo CD audio player of all time. the system that had the actual composite connectors on back, it's
yeah.
supposed to be the most true audio you could ever get from a CD, and this one SKU of the system became, you know, a collector's item. On eBay, you could get a PlayStation 1 for, you know, $20. Meanwhile, if you want that original SKU and it's in working condition, you could be paying $100 or more for this obsolete, long-gone system.
Yeah, it had, like, this, like, special processor. I forget the name of it, but, yeah, it was just, like, the sound was just really high quality.
Completely uncompressed, just the pure audio just came flowing out of that thing.
And then, of course, with the PlayStation, we would be hard-pressed not to mention that it was probably the first system that really, like, broke down, just because it was probably just more complicated than a cart system. I mean, your Nintendo and your Super Nintendo would fail to load sometimes, but, you know, you blow on the cart a little bit, make sure that the dust isn't in the connectors, and you're pretty much fine. And but, like, some of those original PlayStations were just really bad, and I believe, if I remember reading it correctly, some of the glue that they used on the motor that ran that the laser would start melting because it wasn't a high quality epoxy or whatever like that. So it wouldn't actually move like how it was supposed to. So it would get behind, and you wouldn't be able to load a lot of games. Now, the trick to it was to, well, one, make sure that it was on an elevated platform so that all the vents would have a lot of air in it, because it would just overheat. And two, the strange thing would be to put it on its, flip it around and actually play it upside down, play your PlayStation upside down. I used to get two books so that I was always scared if the CD cover was pressed into the PlayStation, it would scratch the disc.
And of course, if you ever pushed on that cover, you could sometimes hear it go.
Yeah, yeah, it was really
scary. Scraping on the disc.
Yeah, and so my PlayStation, it was one of the 1995 ones. Eventually, I had to put it upside down on between two books, and after that, I actually graduated to that stopped working after a while. And I actually put it at, like, an angle, like, upside down at an angle, like,
yeah, like
pressed up against
45 degree.
Yeah, like a 45 degree angle pressed up against, like, you know, the TV stand, and it would start working better that way. I actually never had to get another PlayStation. I always had my original one. I don't know where that is actually right now, but throughout its whole life, that worked with that mod chip and everything. It just had to be at an angle upside down.
Well, I was just speaking with one of our other friends, and he was telling me that from the reports were that the modded PlayStations basically cut your PlayStation's life down to like a third, because it was not optimized for that. So. Oh,
probably that too.
Yeah.
See, and I never modded mine. But I modded using the spring trick.
Oh, yeah,
you put the disc load trick, yeah.
Yeah, you have
a
spring in there, and
you can put a Q-tip also.
Yeah.
What you do, like, you cut part of a Q-tip, and you put it where the
door closer sensor.
Yeah, it would hit that button, yeah, for the door closing sensor.
See, though, I never really modded mine. Ended up, first system I ever had to get, like, three of, because just kept dying on me.
Yeah, yeah, that was, like, the start of, like, those things. I think the Saturn had some of those problems, too, but I don't remember.
Dreamcast definitely did.
Well, Dreamcast had those problems. But, yeah, so we could be talking about PlayStation 4 ever. I mean, there's just so many great games and a lot of, like, real variety of games, just a ton of developers and all those kind of things. But,
thousand games came out on that system?
Yeah,
so.
I mean, there was
Wikipedia says, like,
2000.
Yeah, I mean, there's just all these crazy games. I mean, I don't even talk about, like, any of the Dragon Ball Z games that I had and stuff like that. But I really want to get into PC games and give John a chance to talk about what he was playing at around this time, since he didn't have a PlayStation.
No, I didn't. My brief experiences with the PlayStation were friends renting it, as I said. So this at this point, I was still rocking the 486 with the turbo button, as Kevin and I discussed on the last episode. We had finally upgraded it to 4 or 6 megabytes of RAM. Yeah, so that was, you know, like, I want to say that was $800 to upgrade it at that time, so we could run Windows 95.
probably had a good double-digit megahertz.
Yeah, it was a 66 megahertz, I want to say. Yeah, I think it was. Yep, yep.
Do you have a sound blaster in there?
That's the other thing we got. We got a sound blaster. I thought we talked about this last episode, but we got the sound blaster CD-ROM drive plus the sound card. And this was back in the days before everything was plug it into your machine and it works. This was when you had to set jumper settings and IRQs had to not conflict. And it must have taken my mom about a week to get that computer up and running with that CD-ROM.
And it still might not work.
It might just you didn't know if it was a bad piece of equipment. You were hoping and praying that you did everything right. And so I had my Doom 2 disc CD-ROM that was a 20 meg install, mm-hmm. which was huge.
Yeah.
And, because, I mean, video game cartridges, the Super Nintendo ones, that was considered a huge cartridge size as well.
Yeah, towards the end of its life, it was like 30-something.
32 megabits cartridge, and you're like, I don't know what a megabit is. What does that mean?
Yeah. 32 meg.
Meg, yes.
Yeah.
So, I had Doom 2, that was one I specifically remember playing a lot of. We've talked about Command & Conquer, talked about the Command & Conquer original as well as Red Alert, and then I want to say, we talked about X-Wing and TIE Fighter. I went through a lot of that. That was pretty much what I was playing for those several years, was a lot of PC games that were copied to several floppy disks and then installed on my very, very primitive PC, and so that pretty much kept me playing games, aside from my Super Nintendo stuff, up until college. So I was playing the Command & Conquer PC games, I was playing the...
Were you playing Fallout at this time?
Fallout didn't come out until 97, so I want to say I didn't actually start playing Fallout until I got into college and got it, because this is when we had the super fast internet.
Yeah.
This is most of our experiences. I know my mom had one at her work, and my school had high-speed internet that was no dial-up. So that was the first experience I had with that.
Yeah.
And not having to actually call a number to get connected, not having to worry about somebody picking up the phone and disconnecting me from AOL.
So did you have a 3D card, a 3D graphics card?
No. Okay. This is like I said, this is all computer-based at this time. Yeah, yeah. So this is real early PC stuff. This is when they started to come out with good stuff. I do remember... because in 96, Diablo came out. Mm-hmm. I do remember, we played that in college still. Yeah, that was a game Diablo we were still playing.
Diablo 1 seems so primitive now, but, oh man, that was a game.
That was a game.
That was, just that quest for items thing. I think that was the first one.
Yep.
You were just questing for items. That was the whole game.
I want the armor of the whale.
Yeah.
I want the sword of the heavens. Yeah.
I just want to mine equipment.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it was only, you only went so far down. There were only so many levels.
Well, and it was all in that one town.
Yeah, you had the one town, and then there was, you would progress through the game, you would make your way to the butcher the first time.
You'd run away from the butcher.
Run away from the butcher.
Or die.
You'd start going up levels to run away from the butcher.
Kite the butcher.
Yeah.
And so I remember having that, and playing that for several years.
Man, that game, remember, it had, in your inventory, you'd actually have gold piles in inventory?
Yeah, that was first tricks that we all learned.
Yeah, you'd put the gold,
the dupe trick.
Yeah, well, also, because gold would take up parts of your inventory, and you'd just, leave your gold somewhere, behind a house or something.
Yep.
In piles, and you would just get it at the end of your session, but if you forgot to get it, gold is gone.
Well, you had five, and they were only in stacks of 5,000. That was the max you could have.
Yeah.
So you would have to keep, if you wanted to buy something really expensive, you have these, 20 stacks of gold in your inventory.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, now I gotta spend all these gold. And
was there even a bank in that game?
No.
There was no bank.
No.
It's crazy.
Yeah. This is all...
And you just walked around. There was no running.
No running. Walked around. And what was it? The Barbarian... What were the three classes?
No, it wasn't even... Was it Barbarian?
It's just Fighter.
It was just Fighter.
Fighter, Thief, and Wizard.
Yeah.
Warrior, Rogue, and Sorcerer.
Warrior, Rogue, and Sorcerer. Yep. Well, yeah.
And then the expansion came out with the monk. And then... Wow, look at that. There's apparently two other hidden characters.
Oh, in Hellfire, though.
Hellfire, yeah. Well, it's the expansion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, and then that was the—I think that was the first game that had the color-coded like items.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, you always you wanted you white wanted the, was normal, blue was magic,
green
and
was,
gold.
You had green.
Was it green?
I thought you had green. I can't remember though now.
But anyway, and then gold was the unique, and you wanted all.
You wanted
gold.
Yep. Like I said, you wanted of the heavens. Of the heavens was the best because it was like plus one to all statistics or plus whatever to all statistics.
Do you remember how many guys could play in one multiplayer session? Oh, four.
Yeah, it was four players.
Four players.
And I remember when we all started hacking that game in college.
You were hacking? I don't know. I wasn't hacking.
You hacked.
I didn't hack.
Everybody hacked.
I did not hack.
You duped gold piles.
I didn't know how to.
You duped gold piles.
Maybe gold piles.
That's hacking.
Well, I didn't hack items.
No.
That was
like, I didn't hack items either. I just hacked my character.
Sure.
Just
my
character.
Oh, you hacked your character.
Just my character.
Because
we were playing on, like, the, what was it? The, like,
the
super nightmare setting. No, we were playing on, like, the highest difficulty setting.
Yeah. That was a game.
That was a lot of fun.
That was a whole lot
that
of fun.
That one had longevity. I mean, you kept coming back.
Well,
it
was the first of that. Mm-hmm. It was the first.
It was the first and only one for so long.
Yeah, it was the first one that had all of these kind of things. The gold. I mean, the different colored items. The farming for items.
Yep.
And you know, ease of play, playing with multiplayers and stuff like that, and just like a whole lot of like dark blood and gore and crazy crap. I mean, it had that ending where the guy like stabbed that. Didn't he stab the crystal or something in his head? Instead of like killing Diablo, he became Diablo. Wasn't that the story, like the end of it?
Sure. Yeah, the hero kills Diablo's mortal form, leaving Diablo trapped in a soulstone once again. The hero then drives the soulstone.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, the whole story ended with like this awesome like reversal, where you trap Diablo and then you shove the soulstone
in your brain,
so you can become Diablo.
No, just to contain him. That's what it says here.
Oh, to contain him. Yeah, so he was just in your brain.
You can't become Diablo.
Or whatever.
You can't become the devil. Come on, man. What is it?
I mean, you killed enough people.
Yeah, well, you murdered... They weren't people anymore, remember? They were all demons and devils and ghosts.
Butcher.
That's how we see it. I mean, from their perspective.
Yeah, maybe they were hanging out, having a good time in their dungeons, and then...
They didn't come into town! You went to them.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, I don't buy that at all. I'm sorry.
That's my problem with Diablo. I hate playing the bad guy. I want to be the good guy.
Yeah. let's see. What was I playing on PC at this time? I remember my brother had a copy of GTA 1 on his PC laptop. That came out, I want to say, 95 or 97. I don't know. But Grand Theft Auto... And it doesn't look like anything like the Grand Theft Autos now.
No,
it was top down. You had like a little dude running around, and you had cars.
You had the weird random things like the rampages.
Yeah, you had rampages. You had like if you killed enough Hare Krishnas, I forget, there was like some bonus for it or something. You had these missions that you got from telephones, and. I remember if you failed those missions, you were done with that mission. Like, there was no retry.
GTA was 97. So.
97?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you had no retry.
So, wait, you said your brother had a laptop at this time?
Yeah, he had a Fujitsu laptop with whatever the Windows at that time was. 95.
That was 95, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It was 97 before 98 came out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had a. It was the laptop I actually brought to college.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
He let me have it.
I remember that infamous laptop.
Which is how
he introduced me to GTA.
GTA and and those games were so hard because instead of like waypoint system that they have now or even a map, there's no map. And around your car, if you were on a mission, there would just be like this little yellow arrow that would point in the general. In the straight line direction of where it was. So
as the crow flies,
if you didn't know where you got stuck
in a neighborhood.
Yeah, and then number two was the strangest out of all the Grand Theft Autos. It took place like in a future.
And there is Elvi instead of Hare Krishna.
Yeah, and then you had like these future cars. That game had pretty funny radio like ads and everything, if I remember. But
Yeah, it was basically GTA 1, but kind of in the future.
Saving games sucked on it.
Yeah.
You had to pay a bunch of money, you couldn't get that much money.
Yeah. But, so what are some of the other PC games you remember from this time? Like,
well, yeah, we've talked about some of these.
Like, we'll just say from, like, 96 to, like, 99 or something. This is a pretty good, like, age of video games.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, 96 to 99, there was the Full Throttle game, which I think we've talked about before.
Did we?
I don't know. We might have briefly talked about it.
Talk about Full Throttle.
Full Throttle. That's a game, another similar style to the Monkey Island games.
LucasArts.
Another LucasArts game. But I remember specifically the thing I liked the most about that game was that all the cutscenes were fully voiced,
mm-hmm.
which the Monkey Island games weren't.
Yeah.
Or Maniac Mansion or any of those. This was the first one that, like, all the cutscenes were, like, it was like watching a cartoon, really.
Yeah.
The cutscenes were a cartoon.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you were this badass biker who led this, what was the name of the gang? I can't remember what it is now. I'll try and figure out what that was. But you had your gang, and mm-hmm. you get, like, double-crossed by Mark Hamill voicing the bad guy in that game. And your guy's name was Ben. That's right. He was the leader of the Polecats. That's right. It wasn't even not even a badass sounding creature name like the dragons or anything like that. You're just the leader of the Polecats. And I remember he gets betrayed, but then you get left at this random like bike stop. I want to say it was. It was just some crazy, just in the middle of nowhere. And your goal. I remember the first goal was to get on your bike, and you had to go beat up a bunch of people so that you could capture one of the super bikes. You had those crazy guys with the goggles,
mm-hmm.
and they had those like bikes that they would lean over on, and it kind of reminds me of the Tron light cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And the game was so good.
The thing I remember about this game is that the music was fantastic.
Yep.
And that the motorcycle designs were pretty off the wall and awesome. I mean, you just had
Ben's bike looked fucking awesome.
Yeah,
it had flames coming out the back and
ton of exhaust pipes on
yep.
it.
Yeah, you had these big exhaust pipes.
Well, the funny thing is that I want to say, did this come out before or after Road Rash?
It came out after
95. Because 95 was when Full Throttle came out. Road Rash, I think, came out after that.
Road Rash, the Genesis racing game?
Oh, is that the motorcycle racing? Was that after?
That's
okay.
You're talking about Road Rash.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
It came out on the Genesis.
Okay, I thought that was newer than that, so I didn't know it was a Genesis game.
When was 3DO? Because it was like a launch 3DO game.
That's what the combat was like in that game. You had, you were right up alongside a dude on another motorcycle, and I remember that there were different weapons, like you upgraded. You started out with just your fists. And then I think you got, like, a chain and then a board. And I remember that to take out the first group of the motorcycle guys, the guys with the goggles and the super high-tech bikes, you had to actually get the board, and you couldn't actually hit the guy with the board. You actually had to stick the board. You had to get to a certain point where you could stick the board in his wheel and get him to fly off the bike
mm-hmm.
without destroying it. But those guys were a bitch because they could shoot the oil slick out
mm-hmm.
and cause you to wipe out on your bike. And it was all random which bikers you ran into.
Yeah,
so you could go around for like 20 minutes just fighting those lame biker guys trying to talk some smack on you. And then you'd finally get the one guy, and if you missed your shot on him, it's like, well, I'm going to keep doing this for a while.
See, what I remember on the game more than anything is when you had a cutscene, visuals were amazing.
Yeah.
That. I mean, so clear, so sharp.
Yeah, like John said, it looked like
it was
a cartoon. Yeah.
It was basically a cartoon with awesome animation at that time.
The voice acting
was just fantastic.
This is one of those games that you're just like, you know, it's almost criminal that they never made a follow-up or just something even in the same vein.
I don't know why I can't buy this game now. Like, why is this not anywhere for me to buy? As far as I know, you cannot buy it anywhere digitally.
Really?
Yeah, as far as I know, there is no way to actually buy this game. Like, I lost my copy of it, and I don't know what happened to it.
Huh.
So, I mean, this is one of those games that I would still go back and play again. Because everything in it was so good. And the fact that it was made by Tim Schafer, the same guy who made Monkey
Island
1 and
2. Oh, no, yeah, he made Monkey
Island. Yeah, he was part of the Monkey Island team. I mean,
but this is like his, like, start, like, the Monkey Island.
These are these games, yeah.
Day of the Tentacle.
Day of the Tentacle, yeah.
LucasArts.
He did Day of the Tentacle?
Yeah.
Wow.
He didn't do the original Maniac
Mansion. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was a piece of...
But, I mean, it was so amazing. I just have so many fond memories. Yeah, I mean, Tim Schafer designed this game. And the crazy thing is that this game I've played. I've played the Monkey Island games. I had a copy of Grim Fandango. I never actually got to play it.
I never played Grim Fandango.
I've heard fantastic.
A little bit. It's a lot of fun. And then the computer I was playing on crashed, and
you were never able to get back into it. Yeah.
Yeah, you can never get back to those games once you're, you know, a quarter in.
Well, and then, you know, I never played Psychonauts or anything, any of his other games.
Oh, I
love
that one.
You
yeah,
know, I don't know why a game like this didn't, I mean, They remake so many things now. Why can you not make a newer version of this game?
I don't know. Was it even
John
was Star it
Kickstarter?
But yeah, John Star.
Wouldn't you want to play an updated version?
Well,
of this
I
game?
Mean, the thing is that it's not even has to be the same story.
No,
like, the thing is like the setting was so cool.
Yeah, the idea of a motorcycle base,
like it's
like a futuristic motorcycle.
Future motorcycle, like it's not so much like on the Mad Max sort of thing of like the you know kind of. A crazy future where everything's all jacked up, but it's kind of in that same vein where like it's not like modern life where there's like a lot of rules and stuff
your
like that.
Your part in the world,
yeah, it's
is
kind of like
dystopian.
A wild, yeah, it's dystopian. Yeah, I mean, it was a great setting. That's a good setting.
Yeah, I mean that's
and the music was awesome.
Yep, it was, and that's I mean it just everything about that game was fantastic. Every piece of it was just came together excellent. And I mean, to this day, I can't think of another adventure game of this style that I've wanted to go back and play again and again. I mean, I own the two Monkey Island games that they released, the re-releases they did on mm-hmm. Steam. I've played through one a bit. The graphic updates on it look great. But the fact that they haven't done this game, that's just it's a travesty to me. It's just I'm very passionate about this because this was the first adventure game I remember because this came out around the same time as Myst, and the, you know those point and click like you think about that kind of game. It's the similar style where you're trying to solve a puzzle.
Yeah,
but it's just the presentation on it that sucked me in.
Myst just seemed dead. That's all that needs
it's
to be said.
It's a dead world.
It was yeah,
that
it,
game was for grandmas.
Well, it was beautiful.
I said it.
It was beautiful. The game was
I don't
want to
apologize for Dan right now because he's right.
The game was amazing to look at. I mean, really, it was a technological marvel to see that game in action. But if you didn't have a bleeding edge Apple that had a great graphics card, you weren't really able to appreciate that game or a super high end PC. So, I mean, this game you could play, enjoy, and still have a mid range PC that wasn't, you know, that wasn't on the bleeding edge.
Yeah, they made it look good, sound good, without just pushing technology. I mean,
they pushed the style, which we talked about before with like Mario's, you know, Super Mario World wasn't a technological marvel; it was a stylistic marvel.
Yeah, you make a game that looks good, sounds good, plays good.
Yep.
You don't need to be the best of the best with technology.
No, so I mean, that's one that really, like I said, had a huge impact on me memory-wise that I can still remember fondly playing through it. Especially, I remember the one puzzle you had to do where you had to take the box of robot bunnies, and there was a minefield, but you had to have two boxes of bunnies to get through it. And you would put down the first box of bunnies, and they would start playing Flight of the Valkyries.
Yeah.
And the bunnies would start hopping across the minefield.
Those LucasArts games were just so funny.
Yeah. I mean, I remember crying, laughing at that point. Because it was just so... I'm like, really? They're little robot bunnies. White fluffy bunnies getting blown to pieces. And they're playing Flight of the Valkyries as they're hopping across this minefield.
I think Full Throttle was the game that got me hooked on Tim Schafer. I mean, he's wonderfully twisted.
Yeah. And it's just, I want them to make another version of this game. That's all I can say. That'll be my final statement on it. Make a new Full Throttle game, Tim Schafer.
Or at least make it available for John to buy.
I want to buy this game. If it is somewhere, please let me know. Send us an email or tweet at us.
Sure.
And I will buy this game.
How much would you pay?
$10. Easy. I would give them $10 easy for this game. $15 if they update this game graphically like they did with Monkey Island, I would almost pay $30 for that.
Okay.
Well, that's worth it.
A LucasArts game that, in the same vein that I really liked at this time, was I actually played Sam and Max Hit the Road.
Oh, you played the original.
Yeah, I played the original. That was pretty hilarious. I never actually got all the way through it.
Wasn't Max kind of like psychopathic?
Yeah, he was always talking about killing dudes and stuff like that. It was crazy.
I have a drawing from the artist who did Sam and Max.
Yeah. that game was the dialogue and stuff was really hilarious, but I want to say it came out a little bit before Full Throttle, but I was too young to get a lot of that humor.
That's the thing. I could probably go back and play that Sam and Max game or Day of the Tentacle now and appreciate those even more than like I did at the time.
We should play through Maniac Mansion.
Okay.
The first one.
Is that something we need to do?
Yeah, we should do that.
And watch like, our and brains just, melt?
Well, yeah. I would like to play it in color because I played it on an Apple IIe, and like I said, everything was green.
Oh, wow.
So it's just like, I remember there was this one part where you had to get, like, ketchup off of a dinner table, and I didn't know where the ketchup was.
Because you couldn't see the
color. Because all the colors were green.
Yeah.
But, yeah, computer games, man. It's,
So, yeah, and I mean, you know, that was that year, 95, was when that came out. I remember we had our CD-ROM. And I think, I want to say I borrowed that from a friend, or I got it as a Christmas present. I can't remember exactly how I had that game, but I held on to it all the way through, I think almost all the way through college, and then, for some reason, the CD got lost somewhere during a move one time.
Oh.
Yeah. And that CD actually was one of those LucasArts collections, so it came with Full Throttle, and I want to say it had a couple other games on there, like, I think it had the original Dark Forces, maybe, on there.
I think I know what...
Yeah, I know what
you're Yeah, you guys about. Know what I'm talking about. Because remember, when you buy a LucasArts game, they would give you that booklet that came with them that was like, here's other LucasArts games you can buy, and other LucasArts merchandise you can
buy. They had a lot of demos.
They did.
Like, yeah, LucasArts games always had a lot of demos.
I remember reading about The Dig, and I was like, what is The Dig?
Yeah, though I never played that.
Never
that
played
was like
that.
A big thing. That was a Spielberg thing.
Yeah.
Like he wanted to make a movie, but he didn't have enough money and
The technology wasn't there to express the story.
And
so
you were just like, oh, man, but I never got to play it.
Never got to play that game.
Yeah, you were like on an asteroid or something. It's, yeah, I don't
know. And then, you know, we talked about this last episode, which was Red Alert. That was when I played the first Command & Conquer. That was mostly a single-player affair. But it had the FMVs with Kane and Nod, and then the GDI. I don't know who was the... can't remember who did the voices, or who were the characters in that game. I want to say that the the characters in that game... like, nobody was really known in that. They were just random actors, you know, doing their best to try and act out. And then, of course, the guy who played Kane went on to be... you know, synonymous with that series.
He showed
up until Command & Conquer 4, if I remember correctly. The same actor still playing King. And that's, like, the only thing I know him from. So if I see that actor in anything else, I'll be like, oh, hey, I know where you're from. You were in a PC game from the 90s.
Was anybody playing StarCraft when it came out? I think that came out in 96 or...
Yeah, I played the first StarCraft. I do remember playing through the campaign on that, like, once... and then never really picking it up again for multiplayer or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
People talk about that game.
It's still played.
Until number 2 came out, that was still being played like mad.
Yeah, I think it's still being played now, just even with 2 out.
Yeah, and I played through some of the single-player campaign. It's alright. Got a little bored because, you know, Warcraft already came along. And
I loved Warcraft 2. That was a great
game.
Yeah. Warcraft 2 was funny. Especially, you know, we all have our memories of that, especially when you click on your guys like a million times to get all the sayings. Especially, I love the humans. They were the best. What do you want? What are you doing?
Well,
join the army, they said. See the world, they said.
Well, the thing that got... I mean, StarCraft, I played that multiplayer, but I never really got into the universe of StarCraft just because it felt too serious. And or something. I don't know
well,
why I never got
Warcraft
it.
Had like the cutscenes. I don't remember any cutscenes from StarCraft. All the storytelling was done in those little boxes with the characters on the actual screen with the game going on.
See, my problem with StarCraft is saying about it felt, I wouldn't say too serious as much as felt kind of sterile.
It just never grabbed it. I guess it didn't grab any of us. I mean, that's...
Well, multiplayer. I played multiplayer.
Okay, you played a lot of multiplayer.
I played some. The problem with it is it came out, you know, before multiplayer was as easy as it is now.
Oh,
you know? You had to get a LAN going, and that was not an easy thing.
Yeah, no, I had a friend in high school who had, I want to say, 4 or 5 PCs, and this is, I mean, think about it. This is unheard of at the time, except for, like, computer labs. But he had all 4 or all 5 PCs in his dining room, mm-hmm. all around a table, so everybody could sit down and play against each other. So that I remember doing the Command and Conquer.
$10,000 of hardware.
Right? Yeah, I don't know how much it was. It never came into my mind how much money that was that could be there. But we played Command and Conquer Red Alert. We played X-Wing versus mm-hmm. TIE Fighter on that. And yeah, I mean, just I remember playing Red Alert cooperatively. You know, it'd be either 2-on-2 or sometimes we'd all play against the computer, like a super difficult computer.
That's always my favorite way of playing, you know, RTS, is you get a bunch of friends and put the computer on insane levels. And
well, and the crazy thing about Red Alert was that it was, the story for that game was so insane. It was like, what if Einstein traveled back in time and killed Hitler? That's the premise of that game.
Yeah, yeah.
So Einstein goes back and kills Hitler, and Stalin and the Soviet Union rise to power. And I don't know what era of Russia that was supposed to be in. I want to say, was it in modern age? I forget. Or if they went back just a little bit.
I don't know.
But I remember that you had your crazy stuff, like the Tesla coils were part of that for the Russians. You had the Americans trying to fight them. And the crazy part about this was that it seemed extremely plausible if that were to happen. You're like, so if... excuse me. If Hitler was killed, what's to stop the Russians from just sweeping over all of Europe? You're like, that makes a lot of sense. Because I was pretty into history at this time, so I knew, like, how bad a person Stalin was and, like, how much a threat the Soviet Union was.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had those extra 20 million people that they could have sent across all of Europe, maybe Europe would be speaking Russian right now if Hitler hadn't been there. And that's one of the things that hooked me on it. I know it's silly, but yeah, it's just kind of crazy. Did you play Red Alert, Dan?
No, I didn't.
You didn't play Red Alert at all?
I was never really into
Command and Conquer. Oh, man. Ah, such a good game. You should go back and at least try it.
Playing Command and Conquer 3.
Yeah, we played that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I never really got into Command and Conquer. This was, like, the start of my heyday of first-person shooters. Like, my first foray... My first era of first-person shooters.
So was this the, like, mouse and keyboard stuff where you started learning?
Started learning that in Quake 1. I had a friend who had a 3D graphics card, a Voodoo.
Ooh.
Yeah. He had a bunch of money and playing Quake 1. And if you remember, Quake 1 had a soundtrack made by Nine Inch Nails.
What?
And a bunch of...
No, just by...
Was it just Trent Reznor?
Well, I remember the crates having the Nine Inch Nails logo on it.
Yeah, they put that on there, but...
Oh, but it was just Trent Reznor?
Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, I just remember that was, like, one of the things.
One of the selling points?
But, like, I remember the first picture I ever saw, I want to say it was in a GamePro or something, and the very first picture of Quake that I saw, and it had, like, a 3D model of a guy or of an enemy, and it looked... like, unbelievable. Like, it was one of those, you know, like, we didn't mention it in PlayStation, but it was one of those when I first saw, like, Metal Gear Solid.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, like, it was, oh, shit, yeah. Like...
How does this game look that good?
Yeah, this is, you know, a new era kind of thing, and same thing with Quake, because I saw 3D graphics before on my PlayStation, but it did not look like that, and it did not play like that.
No.
And, yeah, but you had to have such a big rig. But I remember getting into college and having Kevin. You had Unreal.
Well, I had the demo for it.
Oh, you only had the demo? How come I thought we had the real game?
Because we couldn't play it.
Oh yeah. So this is.
I had a great habit of buying the worst computers possible.
Oh, did you?
I especially motherboards.
Ah.
They were always bad. So. My computer, if you stressed it with anything at all, it would crash every 5 minutes. So Dan's playing the demo for Unreal, and every 4 minutes, you know, he'll be playing, I'll be like, Dan, save, and then it crashes. And yeah. It's like, did you save? Did you hit the save button?
We'd have to restart the computer and then play another 4 minutes, and then it would crash.
How long would you guys do that before you finally say,
like, the whole night?
Long. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
It was probably sad. Destroyed his computer doing
but
that.
You had the gaming consoles, the PlayStation stuff right there.
Yeah,
but you were slogging through
Unreal.
I didn't play Unreal.
I can tell you. Like, when you played Unreal, it was, you looked at Quake and went, like, why does it not look... Why
like
does
that?
Yeah? Why does Quake not look like Unreal?
Unreal
real good. Quake, you know, id is all about dark hallways and everything being like all demons and shit like that.
Well,
and
wasn't it also all about making sure that frame rate was smooth the whole time?
Yeah,
because like Unreal was graphically like beautiful, but it did not run at like 30 frames per second.
I don't remember
like, all the time.
I remember Unreal had like big open spaces and like these. Crazy guns that weren't just shotgun, rocket launcher, you know, plasma gun. Like, I mean, you had what are some of the weapons in Unreal? Like, I think there was like there was a crazy like a different kind of shotgun that they had. There was an 8-ball. There was, instead of the rocket launcher, you had this like kind of gun that shot these rockets. But the secondary use of it was that it would load rockets into the thing, right? Until it got to 8 rockets, then it would shoot all 8 at the same time. Like, it had a little bit more of imagination than Quake. I mean, you know, it is still making the same game.
Yeah, Quake would just Doom in a different flavor.
Quake 4 was the same as Quake 1. I mean, but I mean, having said that, after the first year of college, I went back home.
Mm-hmm.
I was given some money to make a proper desktop because that laptop was not hacking it. And of course, I made sure that it had a nice processor.
I remember your computer when you came back sophomore year.
A nice 3D card, and then I started playing Quake 2.
Wasn't just that. Don't forget, there was Quake 2, but you were one of the rare ones because you and all the rest of our buddies were playing Quake 2. But you were the rare one who decided to get into Unreal Tournament as well.
Yeah.
So you were a UT guy.
Well, that was later because that was Quake. Unreal Tournament came out with Quake 3.
Was that Quake 3?
Yeah, that was there were the two competing ones. So Quake 2, when that came out, that was rad.
Yeah,
with the multiplayer. Quake 2 was just so much fun. Like, the balance to it, the rocket launchers and stuff like that. I remember just going to like other servers just because, I mean, like we said in college, like we finally had like this
high speed internet,
yep. And you know, I could play Quake all over the world. I would go to other servers, other school servers. All the schools would. The funny thing, like in like this period, 98, 99, 2000, like a lot of like the servers that were online were actually like school servers.
Yeah.
Like, because
kids with high speed internet.
Yeah. Well, like a kid in the computer science department would set up a server that nobody else would know about, and you just play Quake 2.
Yep.
I mean, and there was a lot of and also like IT departments around you know, like in companies. You know, a lot of people didn't know what IT was, and these guys who were computer nerds and also liked video games, they would set up these servers. I remember going, my brother who's into IT. I remember going to his office in one of the big buildings in downtown Honolulu, and playing like on a Saturday on all the work machines with him and his buddies, the whole IT department.
Nice.
We played Quake 3.
Nice.
Like, I mean, because this was before, like, anybody knew, what, like, you know, like, oh, these are the computer nerds. Just, like, do whatever. Like, just
seal them up in their room.
Do we have email? Do we have Netscape Navigator? All right, let's go.
Ignore
like, we don't,
them
yeah,
well,
just
that's
do whatever.
The thing, because they could convince their, like, they would convince the boss, the IT guys, is like, we need to get these computers. These
yeah,
the
with these
computers.
3D graphics.
These,
cards.
This is what we need. Okay, we
my
need that. Right, you know, you're the IT guy. I'm
yeah,
gonna
yeah, you know,
say.
Like, there was, and even in the computer science departments, you could people just run servers and stuff like that. I remember playing at our college at Seattle U. In the computer science department rooms, like for the in the server rooms, playing Quake 2 with like people I knew who had the access on the weekends.
Nice.
And we would just play, we'd play these games. And nobody had like original copy. I don't know, I've never bought Quake 2. I don't know where that copy came from. It just got distributed amongst everybody.
It's a cheap whore around the school.
I don't know if it was downloaded, but I know somebody might have had the copy at one point and just gave it to every
Wares with a Z.
Yeah.
Cracks.
Yeah. Cracks.
Looking for the best cracks.
You're looking for Wares.
Hot Wares.
See, what I liked with the school community for, like, Quake 2 was how you can mod the game, you know, have your own little server set up with, like, the grappling hook, and certain people became legends around the school. Oh, this is guy who, you know, he set up the server where you have the grappling hooks. This is guy who tweaked, like, you know, the rocket launcher.
Yeah, and then I just remember having these huge epic battles with Ohio State University. Like, sure. We would be on their server, and a bunch of Seattle U guys, we'd like you know, just stomp them in Quake 2 and Quake 3. It was crazy. They official Ohio State.
I remember it's infamous. I never played these because I didn't have a 3D card.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still playing the old 2D stuff, most of that. But yeah, I remember getting a few chances to try and play that stuff with you guys when somebody would get up from their computer to take a break. I'd be like, okay, I'm going to sit down in front of our buddy Lou's computer and play some some Quake 2.
See, I'd play for about a month, then I'd be off for 3 months because, well, my newest motherboard died and it took me 3 months to get a new one.
Yeah,
I went through about 15 motherboards in college.
So for the most part, I was playing, you know, a lot of the lower tech stuff.
Well, I mean, this is really one of the golden eras of PC gaming because you had these FPSs, you know, Unreal was getting started up, and then Quake 3 and Unreal Tournament, this is, like, huge, and then, you know, Half-Life comes out in 1999, like, and that kind of changes everything with, like, how...
98.
Is it 98?
98, yeah.
Wow, okay, well, Half-Life comes out in 98, and that changes the whole, like, story-based first-person shooter, also deathmatch stuff. They had a lot of, like, interesting weapons, a lot of interesting levels. A lot of tons of mods
Never beat Half-Life. I'm going to mention that now. That's another thing.
You can play Half-Life up until you get to Zen, and then you don't have to play anymore.
Okay.
That's the ending.
Yeah.
That's when your computer magic
turns off. I remember my brother playing that, and, you know, I was, like, kind of playing with him or, you know, just kind of watching him and stuff. And he got to the alien world, and he's just like, what the hell is this? I wanted to shoot dudes. I don't want to shoot this alien crap.
I don't know if he even finished
it. Like, it's just, it was just
the dude. First time where you get to a game, and you're like, yeah, I think I'm not going to play this anymore.
Yeah, yeah. But Half-Life was great. But, I mean, but... Other than just the first-person shooters, I mean, you had the two Fallout games.
Oh, don't
at
even.
At this point, and then you had the Baldur's Gate games.
Yep. Fallout came out before Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
And I can honestly say that Fallout and Fallout 2 are in... I don't know if they're both in there, but since I consider both of them the same
game.
They're pretty much the same game. Fallout 2 just adds more features and has, like, a different... You know, the story's a bit different, but it's still the same game. Like, the core of that game is still the same. So, that series, those first two games, would be in my top five. I mean, if not, it's really hard. That might also be one of my favorite games, my favorite game of all time.
Yeah.
It's just, I remember playing that game for hours upon hours, and just randomly going to spots and finding... Oh, look, I found a cave full of rad scorpions, and I'm going to kill them so that I can get experience, so that I can get level up and get my next perk.
One of the things I remember most of a Fallout was just that opening cutscene where, like, I think they, somebody, like, gets executed, like, on a street or something,
no.
If I remember.
No. Fallout's real simple. It's the, if I remember correctly, it's the TV. That cuts off because I know they've harkened back to that in several of them. As far as I know, Fallout just has a very simple, like, pull back, show you the apocalyptic landscape, and then when you start the game, you have that first conversation with the Observer in your vault, who's you know, got that weird kind of deformed head. Because most of the people had weird looking heads in the
radiation. It's a bitch.
The first person use that they would show you. But it was also fully voice acted for all the the main characters who you would talk to, and they had some famous people. Like I remember Kris Kristofferson's voice was one of the guys. He was one of the shop owners that you could talk to at some point. Ron Perlman, voice of the War Never Changes.
Yeah,
I just remember getting just totally lost in that game, and then making characters, like trying to figure out like the best way to allocate my skill points. Do I want to make this guy like a heavy brawler that goes up to people and punches them in the face or hits them with a sledgehammer? Or do I want to make this like super cool sniper who stays super far back, has a lot of action points so that I can snipe people from really far away?
You could get a car.
You could get a car, yeah.
Yeah, that was red.
No, that was in the second one. I want to say that was in the second one. It might have been in the first one.
You could get a car, that was red.
You got a car and then you could start traveling around faster. And there was no real direction in that game other than the very first mission. They're like, you should go to this vault. It's over this way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would go towards that vault, and then you'd encounter that first town, which was Arroyo. And you're like, wait, what's this? So you go into the town, you start talking to some people, you get a couple side quests, and then it just starts opening up more and more. You find out that, oh yeah, you know, that vault's all closed off. There's a bunch of crap in there. You're probably not going to find anything in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go explore that vault for the first time. You kill a bunch of mole rats and just regular rats. Because you always started out fighting rats, just like in the MMOs. It's like, I'm killing rats, trying to level up. And then by the time you get through that first vault and you get that first level up, like, I want to say it was like right around that point that you would get your first level up. And you get to choose your first perk. And then you see this list of perks and you're like, wait.
This game's big.
There's a lot of stuff to do here. And then there were perks in there that were, like, very cosmetic, they didn't really do anything solid for you. But you wanted to pick them because they sounded so crazy. Like, you had, like, kamikaze, you had these crazy perks that was, like...
Couldn't you become, like, a porn actor or something?
That's in 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, in 2 you could go to the... I want to say it was, what was the name of the city? Because it was on the... They expanded out the world, like, a whole bunch in that second one.
Yeah.
And then, like, one of the, like... I want to say it was Reno, where you could become the porn actor. New Reno. And the building you go into to, like, audition is got, like, this heart-shaped bed on it and a bunch of lights around it because they're going to be filming there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then you got a perk for doing that, too.
Jeez.
Oh, yeah. I get just, like I said, I must have played that game at least a dozen times since it came out, beginning to end, both games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you were saying, you don't know what the plot really is. You just get pointed.
Yep.
And then after that, you flesh out the world. It's not about just go point A, B, C, you're done.
Mm-mm.
Go explore. Learn this entire world with just a ton of story to it.
Well, and that...
And you'll eventually...
That and the fact that, like, when you get out of that first vault area and you kill those rats and you go outside, you get that map, and you can click anywhere on that map.
Yeah.
And you'll walk, you'll start heading that direction, and you might encounter a super mutant.
Yeah,
and that super mutant will destroy you in the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, all you've got is a knife and a hammer, and it's like, well, this super mutant's got a chain gun.
Yeah.
This is not going to go well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know if this is the appropriate time, but, like, I mean, I didn't play Fallout 1 and 2 as much.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, like, even though I loved the new Fallouts.
Fallout 3 in New Vegas.
Yeah, it just seemed like there was so much more, like... little, like, granular things that like, made those games special that didn't translate. I mean, Fallout 3 and New Vegas are really, like, they're special in their own right.
Yeah.
But, like, they don't have, like, the crazy, like, you can't become a porn actor.
No.
I mean, you know, the craziness that was, like, indicative of this, like, time in PC gaming where you just had these crazy things.
They encapsulated the experience with the new ones, but they didn't. They almost, like, they came so close to getting it perfect.
Yeah.
But there was just a couple things missing that didn't quite...
You didn't get a car.
No, you didn't get a car.
Although they did good with some of the quirkiness, like, what was it, the Republic of Bob?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. There's some quirkiness.
There's a lot of the humor is good in both of those new games. That's another thing that they were very good at. But, yeah, there was just something about those two games. The fact that you were not... there. I mean, in Fallout... 3 in New Vegas, you have so much handholding. They're like, okay, you should probably go here. This is where you need to go.
You always have a quest
marker. You always have a quest marker. You can go in that direction. With the first 2 Fallouts, it's just, if you forgot where, like, if I come back to a save that I'm playing now, if I go into a Fallout 2 game and I'm, like, middle of the game, I'm going to be like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
I'm restarting.
Because,
well, I don't know if that's better or worse.
No,
that
no,
might
no.
Be, that
but,
might
I mean,
be better.
But, like, the fact is that you would go to... You had all these places on the map that you could go to near the end of the game. Mm-hmm. And if I were to stop playing at one point and just be in a random town, if I had been in that town, like, 4 or 5 times already because I had been completing random quests,
mm-hmm.
I don't know which part of the storyline I'm really in. It had, I mean, you could look at the Pip-Boy and it's like, what is my main objective? In number 1, it was get a water chip for so long.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'm still having to get the water chip, but I don't know exactly where in that process I am.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, there's all sorts of callbacks to the game in number 2 to number 1. You know, there's characters who show up in number 2 who were in the first one. Even in number 3, there was a callback to a character who was in the first Fallout game, if
mm-hmm.
you ever looked for him. The guy who was the tree. Did you guys ever find him in Fallout 3?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was the ghoul in the first game that you could find.
Really?
Yeah, it's the same character.
Wow.
And it was, I want to say it was the same voice who was doing him, too.
Huh.
Which, when I had that moment in Fallout 3, I was like, yes.
Yeah.
You guys, that's such a great little callback that only people who are playing the first 2 games are going to appreciate. Because I know there were a lot of people who played Fallout 3 who were like, oh, these are guys who made Oblivion and Morrowind.
Yeah.
I'm going to play this game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I can still go back and play that game just the same way I can go back and play Full Throttle still be enamored with how great that is.
Yeah, and it helped that, once again, it's a game where the visuals, you know, it wasn't about technology. It just looked good and clean.
And the way the combat worked in that game, it was turn-based. You had your action points. And you knew exactly, like, you planned out your turn because you knew how much everything costs. It's like, this is going to cost you this many to do this action. This
mm-hmm.
is how much it's going to cost you to move over here because it had the hexes, but you didn't actually see the hexes. And
well,
you knew, like, you had percentages, you could aim for certain parts of the body.
Mm-hmm.
It's a system that, I mean, still exists. I mean, it's a little more, you know, complex with aiming for body parts, but it's essentially what XCOM just did a month ago.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the cool thing about the Fallout series is that at least, you know, we have the sequels now, like modern day stuff that
yep.
at least continues that legacy of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we had a couple examples like with Full Throttle,
mm-hmm.
like where, you know, these games just met a dead end and then they just, you know, nobody ever picked them
yep.
up again. But yeah, I mean
in Fallout's case, it took
a while.
It took over a decade, but yeah,
yeah, but
finally
at least we have something that's still you know, that's accessible. Like those games were very popular and it's
mm-hmm.
accessible to modern day gamers, but also like, you know, hardcore Fallout fans still appreciate.
Oh yeah,
cuz
I've played through Fallout 3 twice.
Yeah.
And I've gone through Fallout New Vegas 1.5 times so far, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So
if I'm hearing right, the lesson here is Fallout could come back, XCOM could come back.
Yeah.
Tim Schafer, John wants
full
you to
throttle
make Full Throttle.
Please make
back.
A new Full Throttle game, Tim Schafer.
Hey, make a new Maniac Mansion game, too.
Yeah.
That was pretty rad.
Shut up and let me give you my money.
And you know what? A new Indiana Jones adventure game would be cool, too.
Do we want the old Indiana Jones? Do you want, like, super old indie?
No, I want...
Nuke the Fridge?
I want classic indie. No, we do not want
that
Crystal Skull.
That never happened.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
Okay,
was...
well, we're asking Santa Claus, Tim Schafer for stuff. I need Psychonauts, too.
I have that. Never played it. It's on my computer. I just got to play it at some point. So, yeah, I mean, this is the point where I start to get into college, and this is, you know,
this is
what
we're
playing.
I mean, you know, like,
When we get into college, that's where we really start, like, start seeing some of the, I start playing PlayStation games, finally, because my friends have a PlayStation, so I can actually start trying that stuff. I finally pick up an N64.
Same here.
Well, the funny thing is, as much as we were gamers pre-college,
yep.
once we got into college, I mean, the gaming thing just opened up, and we're at the right time where, like, it wasn't, I mean, it was expensive, but it wasn't so much that you had to have, like,
Well, let's be honest here. The reason we got exposed to so much gaming,
well, it was piracy,
was because
it was Wild West, the internet,
the easy access we had to games. Well, so we could all try a copy of The Sims and download it onto our computers and play The Sims for 12 hours straight.
Yeah.
Although the other thing that helped is, you know, when we got to college, on one hand, high-speed internet, so you could look up videos of games and pictures and whatever else.
Yeah, this is when they started putting that data online.
Big community where we're all gamers and we all have our different backgrounds, so Dan showing me GTA that I never saw before.
Yep.
I never had an N64 until Dan brought one.
Well, yeah, and then, like I said, watching you guys play with a mouse and keyboard on a first-person shooter, and me
going,
it
was just like, what?
How do you do that?
It doesn't work.
Yeah. Oh, man, trying to do that the first time is like you're trying to ride a bicycle in the ocean. It's just like, I don't know what...
It's like learning to play guitar.
Yeah.
Two hands that are doing different things.
Yeah.
So I think this is actually a good place for us to stop for today, and we can start getting into, like, our college experience here, because we just kind of started to dip our toes into the late 90s when we start getting, you know, into the Fallout games, and then, you know, as you were talking about, Dan, we'll get to the Baldur's Gate games.
Yeah.
We'll start getting to the Quake 3. We'll get into that.
Quake 3, Unreal Tournament.
The Sims. We'll have to talk about it, because we all played it.
Planescape Torment.
Planescape, yeah. I never played that, but you will definitely be all about that.
Beauty.
And then also, in a bit of going back in time, I mean,
we still have more PlayStation stuff.
No.
Oh, and emulators, yeah.
Emulators.
Yep.
Oh, yes. Emulators. College was emulator time.
Yeah, that was.
You could get it anywhere.
Internet.
Yep.
Yeah. And all then right. And then kind of the blossoming of, like, the internet gaming culture.
Yep.
I mean, you had...
Yeah.
All the game sites started, and, like, that's when we started following that stuff, and we could, like, find these people in the community that were kindred spirits and go... Or our nemeses, as they were, and defend our gaming...
Gaming
rights.
Games started coming out that weren't single player with a multiplayer component. They're multiplayer
then,
maybe with a tacked-on single player.
And then, of course... MMO.
Ugh.
Oh, yes. All right. So, this is John, and thank you for listening today. Dan, say goodbye to the lovely folks.
Yeah.
And Kevin.
And quick little shout out. We now have a website, so make sure you check us out on infinitelives.us.
Mm-hmm.
Podcasts are there, so check them out.
Will we ask for some emails, too? We have an email account. You may as well give
them that. Well, we have an email account, infinitelivespodcast@gmail.com.
Or go to the website, hit the contact us form.
Yeah. And, I mean, we also have a Twitter account, but it's not really built out yet.
Not yet. We'll be getting there.
Really,
so, we're still a work in progress. We thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.